Good evening, brothers and sisters of the Leaf. Coming to you live from their new top secret lair, deep, deep within Abe Lincoln's forehead, high atop Mount Rushmore, it's the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. Tonight, the boys pay tribute to a fallen icon by celebrating the life of Rowdy Roddy Piper as they dig into the often overlooked cult classic film, Hell Comes to Frogtown. And speaking of classics, the group will be pairing the Monte Cristo Classic Series cigar with the delicious Summerfest Lager from Sierra Nevada. Sounds like our crew is going to pay tribute to a deceased childhood hero the only way they know how, by getting hammered and laughing their balls off to help them fight off the tears. Mr. Piper, wherever you are, you and your pit will certainly be missed. So sit back, folks, light 'em up, and enjoy the show.
What were you guys talking about? The heat?
The heat.
No, I was getting the music started. You guys were talking about the heat?
Yes, the heat.
Might be interesting to talk about on the show. Yeah. Unless you guys talking a lot, like, while we're getting ready for the show and stuff. That's shit we should be talking about on the show.
Dude, it's just the heat.
Look, you see the movie we're doing tonight? There's not a lot of material here to fill to fill a show. I was driving down Central the other day. I saw you outside talking to some dude on the sidewalk. What were you talking to him about? Outside the pub. You were talking to somebody. New deal. I'm going to start instituting fines when you guys are having conversations that we could be having here on the show. Save it. That's material.
Dude, what is this, like some 60s, 70s rock band? James Brown?
Look, this ends here. We got a show to do. You ready to hit record here soon? Let's.
Yeah, we are ready. I hit record like 5 minutes ago.
What?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I want the whole world to know.
Well, boys, how's it finally feel to be out of that submarine, huh? Man, nice, isn't it? Now that I've taken y'all's blindfolds off, I'm not quite ready to reveal to you guys where we're at, especially the way you're running your lips around town. I have zero confidence you can keep a secret.
Well, loose lips did sink the submarine.
They did. That's what sunk the U.S. 469?
U-5-4-69.
U-469. Deep, deep in international waters.
No, actually, I think Mincy got drunk and Mincy, rammed it into the
they let the doctor.
Titanic.
They let the doctor,
into the
just unimaginable. The pressure in the seaman's head was just unimaginable. But you guys like it so far. I'm not going to reveal where we are, but just between us ladies here, before we go live, I don't want to say anything that can get us pinpointed on a map, but just between us, we are deep within a freshly drilled cave behind the forehead of Abraham Lincoln on Mount Rushmore. Keep it to yourself.
But don't tell anybody.
You just told everybody.
Pardon?
Like, everybody. You told, like, everybody. Like, exactly.
You're recording?
Yeah. You never listen to anything that we say.
No. I don't listen to you guys. I should start. And I should stop drinking so much whiskey before the show.
Fuck! Functional alcoholism.
God, that must be nice.
I was about to say, what part is the function here?
Welcome, everybody, to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club Podcast. What a night. We have come here to drink beer, smoke cigars, and talk all things Rowdy Roddy Piper.
It's kind of a sad night.
It is kind of a sad night.
It really is.
A little bummed out, to be honest. First of all, before we start, you can notice we've got Fritz Beer playing here tonight. Realized at the end of last week's episode into the third hour, we never started Fritz's music. And I couldn't figure out why and how it was amiss, but then I remembered, it dawned on me, we had Mincy start off us with a song last week.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the music playing because I didn't want to, you know, compete with that.
And that beautiful Irish tenor.
And the beautiful Irish tenor of his, which I didn't know he was going to go Irish. That stunned me as much as you guys.
Apparently that was the only way he knows how to sing a song. I mean, like, every day he sings, it starts off and it ends up with that Irish.
It does. Yeah,
that's even when he's doing NWA songs.
Exactly. So we do have Fritz here to get us through tonight. It is kind of a sad night. I mean, we're not going to make it sad, but it is hard to feel sad about... I never get too bummed out when people I don't know personally die.
Yeah.
But when it's someone like Rowdy Piper, who's been there since you were a kid in many different facets of your life as a kid, you know, whether it be wrestling, whether it be movies.
Yeah.
He was just one of those guys who was always around, and he was just always such a badass. And he just kind of was my first introduction to kind of smartassery.
Yeah.
And kind of wit. And I didn't even know what those things were at the time, but I knew he was different. He wasn't just all machismo. And the guy is a sassy, crafty little, motherfucker in and out of the ring.
Yeah.
And he had his funeral yesterday, sadly. So while we'll eventually tonight run out of beers and cigars, we won't run out of, you know, well, we'll never run out of love in our hearts for this guy. He's one of a kind, and you know, we did the Amanda Peterson memorial, but she was just an actress in a movie that we really liked, and she just seemed like she was gone way too soon. I mean, Rowdy seemed like a guy, you know, all these wrestlers seem like they're in fairly good shape, and they hit that 60 age, and it's just...
Well, he lived a rough... a hard 61.
Did he? Because I don't know much about it.
Yeah, he was pretty hard into the drugs for a while.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay, see, I never knew that.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not... Maybe it's one of those...
Painkillers, the booze, I mean...
Painkillers is always the big one with those guys.
And thing I liked about it is that he was pretty open about it.
Yeah, you know, they were actually after he had just, you know, they're... And they've been talking about this a lot, you know, and, you know, there is no, they get up there and they perform, but unlike, you know, most, like, a normal professional athlete, these guys are constantly on the road, they're constantly performing.
There's
it's
no
not
off
like
season.
They have a season.
There's no off-season.
There's no off-season.
Nope. I mean, they travel like 300 days a year.
And everybody looks. I'm sorry for interrupting. No, everybody thinks of Raw and SmackDown, the big marquee shows. But that's not talking about the constant deluge of the house shows. I'll never forget. I had stopped following wrestling for a while and got back into it. And a friend of mine went to a little house show in Waco, Texas, of everything. And they had all the stars there, all the big names. I was just surprised at how many big names were actually from. It was amazing. So it's a job.
And they still do those house shows. My little brother-in-law, he's little, he's 30 now, but he went to a Waco show. This would be back in the what they call it, the 90s Stone Cold Age. Yeah. The
Attitude Era.
Attitude Era. He went to Waco and Undertaker was doing a house show, and they had just appeared on Cigar Aficionado magazine.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of getting into cigars, and he got Undertaker to sign my Aficionado magazine. And these guys work their asses off, and their bodies just, you know, appreciate wrestling for the entertainment it is or not. You can't watch it and not appreciate what these guys put their bodies through.
Yeah.
But, you know, Roddy always seemed like a guy never openly, at least what I got, bitter about. I know he and McMahon had some issues, but, I mean, he always seemed to be one that was fan-first. Extremely fan first. I never read anything where fans just weren't blown away. Over the last few years, he'd started doing horror conventions. And I regret now he did Texas Frightmare 2 years ago, maybe. It was one of his, the first one he did with Keith David, where they did a They Live. Meet them both.
And that would have been fun.
Kicking myself in the ass. I was like, you know what? It wasn't a good time financially or whatever. I'll go next time they do it.
Yeah.
You never know when there's not going to be a next time.
Never know.
So, you know, he's one of a kind, just like we like him. And yesterday was his funeral, sadly. So tonight we're going to touch upon one of his lesser seen films. To be honest, I couldn't do They Live. It's cliche, but it's too soon. I don't think I could watch it with dry eyes.
Yeah.
That movie meant so much to me growing up. For personal reasons, who I was with.
Yeah, I noticed you're wearing the Obey shirt.
I am in tribute. I do not have a Hell Comes to Frogtown t-shirt. I might look for one now. I am wearing my
I have a whole closet full of these T-shirts. Yeah.
No, you were saying
I did go looking for the Rowdy T-shirt, but I couldn't. I wasn't
the hot rod.
Yeah,
the hot rod. You were saying that
you could have at least worn your kilt.
I know, I should have.
Tuttle actually wears a kilt quite frequently.
It's especially in this heat.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, actually, I'm sitting across from you, so see, now, look, we're talking about heat.
Oh, that
I told you.
Oh, oh,
told you this would come up. I told you.
Proving you right.
Yeah.
Now you're saying They Live was.
It just
kind of a,
it was one of the very first genre films that I saw where I was starting to recognize filmmaking and
like the production side.
The production side of it.
Yeah.
And I watched it with my Uncle Dave, who up in Ohio, I was staying with him for this couple weeks in the summer, and he introduced me to pretty much late night horror movies. And I just remember just drooling and immediately rewinding it and watching it again. Like that movie just hit me at the perfect time. And I just and of course that mixed wrestling in, which was horror movies and wrestling were my youth.
Yeah.
If it wasn't an action movie, a horror movie, or wrestling, I was not interested in it at all.
I was surprised because I went back and revisited it a few months back, and I was surprised at how well it held up. Outside of the outside of the clothing, everything else was still on point. I really appreciate that.
Well, we're going to go to They Live at some point down the line. I told everybody at the beginning, we're going to hit every Carpenter film eventually and do it right, but I honestly don't think I could keep a dry eye doing it, which sounds stupid. I never met the guy, and I'm not an overly sappy.
That's
like,
what's so weird is that I'm kind of the same way. I don't get starstruck that much.
Ever.
But
I get starstruck when I meet someone that I get a little kerflumped. What'd you call it, Les? Perplexed?
Flummoxed?
Flummoxed. I get a little flummoxed. But as far as like if they died,
yeah.
I don't know them. I could.
I remember the first time I heard it was a text, you know, in the group text, and man, I just felt really, really down. And that was a little surprising, but man, that sucks.
I should also say it stings a bit just that it happened, but it also stings a bit that we tried real hard a while back to get a film off the ground. We're going to take a different approach to getting this film made, but as
it's still in the bullpen.
As a filmmaker, there's a film that we're really chomping at the bit to make, and it's still very much in the works. Go to Kickstarter and search Angel Dust. You can learn all about it. But the opening of the thing is a spoof on They Live, where I'm dressed up like Rowdy Roddy Piper, and I'm stumbling around downtown Temple with the sunglasses looking around. But we actually reached out. I actually reached out to Rowdy Roddy Piper because we wanted to get a money number, because I wanted him to bring in for a cameo. We have a huge, I don't want to give too much away, but a huge wrestling scene.
And it's been so perfect.
Everybody who read it was like, you got to get Rowdy Roddy. It's a Carpenter tribute film in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But it's so obvious when you read it. I wrote the referee in this wrestling match. I think Escape from New York wrestling match, just very done differently. But Rowdy Roddy's got to be the ref.
Yeah.
So I sent him an email. And to his then agent, I found out later I was sent to the wrong person.
Yeah.
But we wanted to bring Rowdy Roddy down for a day. And again, you never even think that's not going to be an option next week.
Especially, it was only 61.
So
I'm pretty sure it was 61.
Tonight, as we talk about the movie Hell Comes to Frogtown, we're going to toast his memory the only way we know how. TNCC style, we're going to really give this film the it's just desserts. Do you guys have any, before we start, do you guys have any favorite Rowdy Roddy Piper moments from, you know, mine's obvious, They Live. I was a wrestling fan, but that movie just completely blew my mind on so many ways, and his character of Nada just maybe because I was so used to watching action films. Like he was such a weird, this loner. This it was basically a western. This man with no name who stumbles into this town. Like I just never seen anything like that. And I thought Piper did such a good job. And he was so different than I'd seen in the ring.
Yeah,
he's so much like in this movie. He's so Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything
yeah.
is exaggerated. Everything's crazy and Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
But in They Live, it was really subtle. I mean, little glimpses would come out, but it was also my first. Maybe experience of seeing somebody that I knew from one area of life cross over into acting, and you know I'm a kid at this point. I'm not
Yeah. You know, I'm like, what?
And it kind of really
12 maybe. And it's like, holy shit, like, this is a guy I know is one thing.
And now he's acting.
And now he's acting something totally different. And I want to get into, once we're done talking about the movie, I want to get into why that transition from wrestler to actor, it should be such a natural thing, but not a lot of guys have pulled it off, and why not? Yeah. But what are y'all, when you think Rowdy Roddy, like, what goes through your noggins?
Oh, man, I'm like you, I think They Live. That was kind of that.
You weren't a huge wrestling kid, were you?
I was, but, you know, it was just kind of off and on. I mean, when I think Rowdy Roddy, man, I think going back to, you know, WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And those first few WrestleManias were just amazing. I mean, you don't, I know that, like, you know, nowadays you watch them and it's still the same thing for those kids, but, you know, back,
there wasn't anything like it.
Yeah,
it
was, I mean, they started when we saw the first WrestleMania.
Saw the first one, yeah.
So it's you're just like, you know, back in the day, this whole concept, this, you know, huge, long, drawn-out WrestleMania.
And it was just so...
Wait, you mean there's more of it? It's still going on for hours? Oh, my God, I love this.
Yeah. And it was all... So in the glory day of when the wrestlers just looked nothing like...
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you had the honky-tonk man who was like this fat, greasy Elvis, like... Completely out of shape, pear-shaped, crazy, and he was like the most threatening force to Hulk Hogan.
Oh yeah, he was
the
like
Honky Tonk Man.
Yeah, he was the heat. I mean, he was like the
nowadays
enforcer.
When you've got just all the, you know, everyone wears black, everyone has basically the same jacked up physique. Like, this was the days when like Tugboat and
Avalanche
and even like Junkyard Dog and like the big heroes, Big John Studd and those guys. They weren't chiseled, ripped. They were just big dudes that could do some really crazy strength stuff. But you were still under this kind of guise as a kid that this was real, and it's like, it was like a different movie every week with the same players, and it was, but They Live was definitely it for me. Tut wrestling, They Live, same kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it's Rowdy was such a kind of a transcendent personality, because I mean, like, the WrestleMania's great, the feud with Mr. T. I mean, come on, man, that. You know, as a kid, I'm torn. I like Roddy. I love Mr. T. Mommy and Daddy are fighting.
Yeah, that brought in the same thing with Rocky and Mr. T. It was so hard to go against Mr. T. But Mr. T's credit, he made you hate him.
I think what I've really appreciated about Roddy, though, is that after he got out of wrestling, you know, was just disappeared from the media eye for a while.
He did,
and then came back, and I just loved hearing the guy talk, because he's one of the few people that I thought, you know, wasn't really bullshitting you. I mean, maybe he was, and, you know, he's a wrestler, he's an entertainer, so they make their money telling stories.
He always had a very strong air of authenticity as far as, you know, I think I have a fairly good bullshit barometer when it comes to celebrity. Like, you can just kind of tell.
Yeah.
But over the last week, I've seen so many of my... on Facebook, horror people, convention people that go to conventions, that run the conventions, just write these huge, you know, write-ups on just how this guy really extended himself to fans, to, you know, especially to, like, handicapped fans that would come up, like, picking kids up out of their wheelchairs and, like, you know, just going the extra.
You know, Roddy had a podcast, right?
I do. I never listened to it.
Again, well, that's because it got taken off.
There'd be time.
Apparently,
he ran into some stuff with Vince.
And Stone Cold.
And Stone Cold there at the very end.
Yeah, that's...
Are we ever going to find out what happened there, or...?
I heard an interview with Roddy, and he never really got into a lot of the detail on what was told to him, other than...
Like a week or two before he died.
Yeah, other than it... he basically... got to poking fun at Stone Cold, and then a short time later, an exec from WWE basically said, you're not going to do that, and by the way, we're pulling your podcast.
And you can't do a podcast anywhere else.
They shut him down. Shut him down.
Because he was on the big one, what, Podcast One? Or
yeah. And I don't know what... I missed it, so I don't know what it was said. I heard him... And see, that's one of the things I liked about it, is that he was... explaining his side, not necessarily apologizing for anything that he did, But just explaining it, kind of like what it was, what was told to him. Like I said, he's one of those guys that it's like a snake charmer. I'll believe anything that he says, and I don't know whether that's good or bad.
Well, when Carpenter was asked about casting him, he always in They Live, he always said, he just came across as he was. He was a working man. You could tell by his hands, like he was a working man that could do things in the film that would be believable.
Yeah.
But he's like, Roddy was a real guy. He wasn't Hulk Hogan. He wasn't this
caricature.
He wasn't this caricature. He was actually Rowdy Roddy. So when you watch him in They Live and at certain moments in Hell Comes to Frogtown where he dials it down, like you can see the guy's actually trying to kind of rein in this nice little performance. But if you let him go big, he's going to go fucking big.
What are you talking about, Kate?
Because he's a big guy.
Yeah.
You give him license, it's going to poke you in the eyes. I mean, that's just what he does. But he's so much fun. I wish he had made so much more movies. I totally forgot till you said this. You were stuck in an airport last week or so, right after he died.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot. Forever ago, I had texted you a link. I'm like, have you ever heard of this failed 80s television pilot called Tag Team?
It's an episode pilot of Awesome is what it is.
It's a detective show. Have you heard of it?
I have.
Where Rowdy Roddy and Jesse Ventura are wrestlers, and they won't take a fall in the big match.
Right.
So the guy who owns the wrestling, his wife, gets rid of him. So they become cops, where they basically just go around wrestling everybody. It's on YouTube. Check it out. That's all I'll say. The guy should have done more.
Yeah. It was great.
So, Roddy, here's to you. I'm not going to do our ceremonial pouring of...
apparently have no leak-proof vessels.
With Amanda Peterson, we poured some of our liquor out into a stinky ashtray, and it started leaking all over the table.
And then the stinky ashtray started pouring Amanda Peterson out on us.
First of all, I had to convince you two guys to pour out some of your beer.
But it's hot.
It's like you didn't want to do too much, and it's like, well, we didn't like her that much. But the Tuesday Night Cigar Club is pro Rowdy Roddy Piper. Strong vibes of positivity to his family. Just a really unique individual. Yeah. And we love unique individuals here.
You brought decades of happiness to people.
He did, and to us. So tonight's all about that. So on that note, keeping with the theme of something that's made us happy over the years, we're going to be smoking a Monte Cristo tonight. One of the oldest brands out there, Cuban and domestic. We're going to smoke the Monte Cristo Classic Series Toro. Very firm, well-constructed cigar.
Felt good.
It really does feel good. I chose this cigar for the simple fact that everyone at this table has had a Classic Monte over the years. This was kind of, a rebranding of the Classic Monte to kind of reintroduce the staple Monte Cristo line, because they've kind of branched out a lot of different areas. It's like this was just kind of a reminder that, hey, this is our flagship, the one that started it all here in the States. And I'll bet you dollars to donuts, you boys have enjoyed most of your Monte experiences.
More often than not.
They're just a great...
Yeah.
I'd say much more so than some of the other older bands.
If I go to the number two, I know I'm having a fun time. If I'm going with the Texas edition, love that cigar. The Epic, I love that.
The Epic we did was really great. I love the Espada that we did. Holy smokes, that was a good smoke. Was that the guest we did that one with? I think so,
yes.
Man, that was a phenomenal cigar. Yeah. So more often than not, I'm a big Monte Cristo fan. Cuban, too. We got some at Tut's wedding. We had a box of a friend brought a box of number fours, and that was a damn good smoke, too. So they do it right, and I didn't want tonight to be soured by a cigar that kind of took us in a negative direction. I wanted to pick something I thought we'd have a pretty good time with. Montes to me are like kind of the classic films you go to time and time again. You could be sitting on the couch and it comes on and you've seen it 100 times. You own it unedited, but it's on TV edited and like not even in HD, but you'll still sit there and watch it. just because it's one of those, it's comfort food in movie form. To me, a good Monty is like that. You know, it's a no brainer. I'm probably going to like it. You know, just like I like Predator, Halloween 4. It's just easy, and I like it.
These are a few of my favorite things.
So I just wanted to smoke something that was guaranteed to go down smooth, and so far off the first couple drags, I picked a winner. As far as the beer pairing tonight, what better place to turn than the cigar pairing guide? We're winding down on our cigar pairing guide selections.
Thank God. I mean, that's awesome.
We can edit that out. No! The cigar pairing guide rocks.
It does. I just like to give him crap.
I know you do. You like their flamboyant prose when described. Let's see what they have to say about the Monte Cristo Classic tonight. Bearing the most iconic cigar band in the world, Monty, I'll give him that. The Monte Cristo Classic is the seed that sprouted a legend. That's what how I refer to my daughter. Or, I guess it'd be my...
Your ejaculate?
I don't know where you're taking
no, this. No, I guess that'd be my dad's ejaculate. Can we edit that out too?
Yeah, let's.
I have it right here on the. There's like three things never to do on the show, and I have. Don't ever mention your dad's ejaculate on here. Hey, we made it episode 15, boys. I made it 15 episodes.
Crap! I think Mincy won the pool.
The seed that sprouted a legend, with a complex and flavorful smoke, featuring a wealth of tasting notes, the Monte Cristo Classic is truly worthy of its storied name. Again, hi. High praise coming from Monte Cristo. It's a Dominican, obviously. Country manufacturer is a Dominican. The wrapper is a Connecticut shade. Binder, Dominican. Filler, Dominican. Light gold, oily sheen. I definitely see that. It's a beautiful looking cigar.
It is.
Body, mild, rounded. Aroma, floral, rich tobacco. And here's a new one. Every once in a while we'll get that one that I've never heard of, and usually you guys...
That's why I do like the pairing guide.
You ready for this? Are you guys picking up an aroma of heather honey?
Wait.
Heather honey.
Wait. Is that what prepubescent that? Heather?
I don't know what heather honey is. In Tuts from Austin, he will only smoke cigars that smell of local honey. Local honey.
Do I now have to get on my high horse about local heather?
Well, I just thought you were going to put it out. You know.
Yeah, screw this.
Wait, is there local heather honey notes? Just for him, let's see. Oh, yeah, I just looked up my phone. It's local heather honey. That's, oh, okay. It's a thing.
Is it from Rogers, Texas?
Yeah, very one. Very same one. The flavor notes you guys should be looking for. Rich tobacco. It's Monty. You're going to get good tobacco. Almonds. Butter. I'm all for that. Toffee and vanilla. Okay, that's nothing crazy. That's a good Connecticut. Should give you some almonds. Yeah. Some.
I was about to say, oddly, I can taste the almonds.
You getting the almonds?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be looking for that butter. Or maybe margarine. I can't believe it's not a butter note. Boy, we have fun with this guy, don't we?
It's just butter.
The finish?
Oh, sorry, I'm almost busting out into butter. A Billy laugh.
Well,
I'm interested to find out if I can taste butter in a cigar. Am I supposed to like roll it like I would like a corn thing onto the butter? Like get you know, pass that butter over here.
Well, let's see what can hurt. The finish is going to be long, smooth, and balanced.
Much like
my lovemaking. You know what? That was number two on my list of things I'm going to talk about. You guys don't want to know what number three is.
There's things coming off the list left and right.
Once again, I'll end it with a quote from Larry Palumbo, the vice president of tobacco for Altadis USA, who we partnered with to talk about the cigar pairing. I'm sure they'll be rethinking, re-engaging that contract.
Hey, whoever the marketing director is that hired these guys, I got three words for you. My father's ejaculate. Yeah, we can't have this. You're fired.
Hey, it's the seed that sprouted a legend. In his own mic.
Oh.
We are legends to everyone
who's never met us.
Who's never met us. Or only to us. We're legends in our own minds. In our own time. But Larry Palumbo says the Monte Cristo Classic is one of the most balanced cigars on the market. This is a perfect everyday cigar.
I could agree with that.
Hey, I'll smoke Monty's all day long if you give me, give them to me. Sure.
Yeah, I mean it's. Well, I'll wait till we get into
see
it.
How we do. Go to my cigar, mypairingguide.com. I push it a lot because it's a cool site. Put in your likes, your dislikes. It'll pair you up with a perfect drink,
yeah,
with a perfect smoke. Go to MonteCristoSocialClub.com, sign up. They've really been active lately, sending out stuff on cigar lounge etiquette, some road shows that Monte Cristo's done around, some giveaways. So go do it.
You know, we give them a hard time because of all the marketing language in it, but it's actually a pretty cool little concept.
It is very cool.
I was very excited because, you know, they came out like shortly after we did, and when I found out that they were doing like a cigar and a beer pairing guide, you know, it kind of just coincided with what we were doing. There's a lot of synergy there.
There's a lot of synergy.
Like butter and almonds.
Like butter and almond synergy. And heather honey, if we're
and
lucky.
Heather honey.
But no.
What is it? Seriously, we have to find out what heather honey is. I don't...
is it a... What are the names of girls I've never dated?
Well, that wouldn't... Non-strippers.
No, I only
Is that
date...
the date now here a week later? Hi, I'm Heather Honey. I knew it.
Well, see, Todd goes to those Austin strip bars. It's like, now, center stage, local honey. Local honey, you're wanted on center stage. I only get lap dances from local honey.
I only get lap dances from strippers that are named after cities or states. Montana, Cheyenne.
Oh, remember that Minneapolis girl? Trying to forget.
Yeah, I think her name was St. John.
Want to dance, baby? Want to dance, sugar? No mentioning of sugar, please. Gluten-free wings are on the way if you'd like to join us. Boy, that town just knows how to suck the fun out of everything, don't they? Except a good Mumford & Sons concert.
Cody, speaking of Avett Brother fans, tell us about this beer.
Real quick, the cigar pairing guide, all it said as far as the beer goes, I wanted to drink beer tonight. It's hot. Texas, 104 today. We talk more about it, but you guys already pretty much said all you need to say before the show. Speaking of blown loads or wasted ejaculates, it said to pair with a lager. So what are we drinking tonight?
We did go with the lager. We went with Sierra Nevada Summerfest. It's one of their summer seasonals. It's in the style of a Pilsner.
Which you guys should love. You guys are drinking the shit out of that Hans Pils these days.
Love it.
Loving it.
Loving it. Pilsner.
Good summer beer.
Great summer beer.
Oh, that's weird.
It is. Mm-hmm. This one, in terms of its stats, it's about 5% ABV. And it comes in right around about a 28 IBU. And it has some hops in there. They use about two, three different types of hops overall. And it's very crisp. I mean, you come out, you see it, it's...
Is this like a Czech style?
Pilsner, yes. It is Czech.
Czech, okay.
Originally, where the style originated from, Pils. It's... Right near the Czech Republic, near the German border, near that side. So the style is from that region. I mean, it people associate it coming from the town of Pils, but
you said 20 something IBUs, which is up there as far as 28, which is more so than a lot of the lagers we've had.
I mean, it's gonna you can taste. I mean,
yeah,
it's you're gonna get a little
it's got
bit,
a little bit of hoppiness to
a little
it.
Little bit of hops on the backside. I mean, it. There's a little bit of sweetness there.
Yeah,
and see that? It's like
good.
I said, the,
it's good, boys.
That's what I like.
It's not overly bitter in terms of. I mean, it's very low key. Just enough bitter that it gives you that little to me. It gives me that little kick on the backside.
See, I like it because I'm not a hops guy, but it's got just enough for me to feel like I'm dabbling in it. And man, it's crisp.
No, it is.
Light.
It kind of it's like. I'm trying to think of a beer we did recently. Where it was just very straightforward, just, you know, kind of one after another. No.
The Murphy's Red was like that. A little bit, a lot heavier than this, but not too heavy. But there was a. Crap, I remember. I don't remember the beer.
I think it was.
After, I remember.
It was after Murphy's Red, but it was there was no complexity whatsoever. And it's like this. It's like,
oh, Sympathy for the Lager, Carbach.
No, I enjoyed Sympathy for the Lagers.
Oh, you didn't enjoy the beer we're talking about? Because I think I like the beer that we're talking about. The just the straightforward, straight ahead pill style. It's a beer.
I can't. It'll come to me, but this one, it reminds me a lot of the other Sierra Nevada one we did, the Hops Torpedo. They just know how to balance a beer to where you get that smooth, refreshing first impression, and then it gets you a little surprise flavor and hoppiness on the backside, like you said. These guys have been in business for a while.
Yeah, I was about to say, comes with experience.
Because they know what they're doing. Like, these guys have been around since the beginning of this craft beer insanity.
Sierra Nevada, they started in 1980. They're one of the older micro craft
brewers. Well, you know what? They don't have little kitschy guys with old-timey bicycles and mustaches on the label. They don't have the trendy, wicked cool names. Yeah. But these guys have been doing it long enough, man. It's Summerfest Crisp Lager is what the bottle says, and that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's a good beer, man. It's real good.
Especially when it's 104 degrees outside.
Tonight could get dangerous. It is really hot outside, and we're very thirsty. So, real quick, before we get in, I mentioned, Monte Cristo, which, by the way, the Monte Cristo is pairing really well initially with the lager. They're going well. To me, they're making a lot of sense together.
The first light of the foot, I actually didn't think I was going to like it. There wasn't anything that was kind of hollering out.
You got
to
that
me.
Heather honey.
No, this. Then once I started in on the almond, I actually started tasting what. Believe it or not, Cody, I found your butter.
You got?
Well, I didn't
well,
find your
the butter.
I didn't find your butter.
You're further into it than me. Yeah. So I got some butter ahead of me.
Yeah. Once you get past that third mark, flavors open up. Well, and I like this cigar.
I've already picked up about three or four different transitions, and I'm not even, an inch and a half into this cigar. Just, that's what you're going to get with a Monte.
Yeah.
Don't give up on it, because you're going to, it's going to come back, and it's a Monte.
Yeah.
Not to kind of throw shade on, but like Core Zero, the ones we did last week, that thing was the same cigar from the initial light till the nub. That had zero, zilch, no changes.
Yeah.
Not a bad cigar, especially for the price point. But I've already gotten more transitions in less than an inch in this than I did in that. Never give up on a Monte Cristo. The minute you think it's boring, it's going to do something that might surprise you.
Yeah.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Monte being a comfort cigar, you know what you're going to get. And I mentioned, Howling 4 and Predator. If they're on TV... Even though I own them on Laserdisc, on DVD,
still
on VHS,
I'm still
going to watch it.
Yeah.
To me, Arnold films, Halloweens, those kind of stuff, Friday 13th, those are mine. Like, what comfort movies do you guys have that you'll just watch? It's on TV, you're watching it. Doesn't matter, you've seen it 200 times. I'm just curious. And no judgment.
No judgment?
And honestly, it's going to be a while before I can watch They Live, but it's in that list too. It's not on TV a lot.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, it just never got one of those heavily syndicated movies.
For me, any of the Schwarzenegger stuff, especially Predator, like I've seen that so many freaking times.
Yeah. And it's going to be edited.
Running Man, same way. I just love those. True Lies, any of the
True Lies is a big one.
Yeah.
At any point in the movie, I will sit there and watch that damn movie.
And what's bad is that if I've missed the horse chase scene with Tom Arnold hiding behind the little light pole,
when they're shooting the light post.
Oh man, I get so disappointed. But I'm also a big sci-fi geek, so stuff like Blade Runner, any of the Fireflies, Star Wars especially, that kind of stuff. But the dirtiest one. The dirtiest secret from
going to his rock boys. Hey,
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
I
watched that damn thing.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Tuesday Night.
Oh, is that the third thing we were supposed to mention on here? Oh God!
No, but that movie did take place with Tokyo Chicks.
I don't know why, but I watch that every single time. And I love it.
Do you like any of the other Fast and Furious?
13th things? Warrior was also one, but that's a good one.
Do you like the other Fast and Furious?
They're
things?
Okay. They're okay.
I've only seen the first one.
It's all right. What's bad is I like Vin Diesel, but the only Fast and Furious that I really love is the one without him.
Oh, is he not in one?
No. Well, he makes a cameo at the very end.
Of Tokyo Drift.
Yeah, Tokyo Drift.
What about you, Yax? What movie, when it comes on, are you just... I'm in this.
I just ruined all credibility with our movie.
The main reason I bring it up, you guys know I get a lot of shit for not having seen a lot of big time movies. My rebellious rowdy roddy nature. People tell me you got to do something. My first inclination is don't do it. I'm not doing that. And it goes with movies. I got into it with this Tom, the guy we sit with at the pub every other week. And he could not believe I'd never seen The Big Lebowski. Went on Facebook denouncing me for never seeing The Big Lebowski. Like, this is not how you're going to get me to see it. Calling me out for public shaming. That's exactly why I'm not seeing it. But then my cousin, BC, who Cody knows quite well, he sent me all these pics from... He went to this prison that they used in The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
They toured it.
Yeah.
He's like, kid, you're going to shit your pants when you see these. I actually went, man. I'm here. And I'm like, what is this place? Well, come on, man. Take a look. The sea. I'm like, come again? And he's like, Shawshank, man. Shawshank. I'm like, oh, I heard that was good. I never saw it. Tell me you're shitting me. We're not related. I'm like, dude, I never saw. I'm not a big Tom Hanks fan. Ned set him up. I knew Tom Hanks wasn't in it, but I just fucking with him. Tell me you're not serious. I'm like, oh, no, not Tom Hanks. It's like, I don't care for Samuel L. Jackson movies. I don't even know who you are, man. I'm not serious. I don't know. He literally, I could just picture him through texting, just slowly withering down into. I blew his mind. I'd never seen Shawshank Redemption.
Well, you know, and Shawshank is one of those. I won't lie. Like if it comes on, it's one of those things. You really can't change the channel once you start to hear that Morgan Freeman's narrative voice.
I'd like to tell you, Andy fought the good fight.
And then you're just kind of like. Maybe he's going to say something different this time. But no, he's not. You know he's not going to say anything different.
And that's what my wife always makes fun of me for is when I'm watching Halloween 3 on cable, some cable channel, and she's like, you think they're going to show you something you've never seen before, don't you? Because it used to be every once in a while, back before, you know, Blu-ray, when things were just kind of getting out into DVD and stuff, you would catch some cuts of movies on TV that had been edited in a new way.
In a new way,
and had some weird footage dropped in. So I was used to growing up, like, if it's on TV, I got my VCR going, I'm going to hit record. Like, I'm going to catch something I've never seen. Now I know there's no more footage. I know that's not going to happen, but I still watch the damn thing.
I can say, like, obviously, like, you know, I'm very much the same with you. Anything Arnold, I mean, I just stop. Like, I, like, zone out. Like, there it is. Watch. You just fall right into that, like...
A catatonic must watch.
You just, I mean, it doesn't even matter where it is. You could be like 10 minutes from the end. Stop what you're doing and pay attention. But, like...
Which is so ironic because, you know, Arnold never sits there and watches movies. That's why he's Arnold. He's out there doing stuff. And we're there... We love Arnold.
But, you know, I like any...
Watch Running Man for the 50th time.
Obey.
But probably any other thing that I would sit there and say is like...
It is obey.
Any James Bond movie...
Oh,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter which, you know, Connery,
Timothy Dalton,
Moore. I watch the Timothy Dalton ones. I will watch any James Bond movie. If it just, I'm flipping a channel and boom, there it is. I stop like James Bond. I mean, I don't know why my brain.
How many TBS James Bond marathons have you watched?
Oh, good God!
For longer than 8 hours. Because those things used to go
all
day.
The fact that you have to think about it is just... that's your answer. So basically what we've deducted is we're the most stereotypical group of 30 to 40-year-old men in the world. We watch horror movies, Arnold movies, James Bond movies. I was just looking. I was like, I was hoping Cody would be like fried green tomatoes. I just cannot. Bridges of Madison County, I get hooked in and I'm just like, he's going to hurt her.
Fairly certain I'm going to cut myself with this bottle cap now that you said that.
Not even a missed out fire among you guys. Nothing. All just balls and bullets. All right, good. Good.
I'm sure there's some others, but I'm just not thinking of them right at the moment.
Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, but they don't show that a lot.
Yeah. I always have to load that in the DVD.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've avoided this as long as humanly possible. Although, you know what?
You're going to die, Frog!
Hell comes to Frogtown. Just like last week's Sleepaway Camp 2, Unhappy Campers, this was 1988. A great year for horror and exploitation filmmaking.
Is this an earlier one or later one of Piper's?
This came out the same year as They Live.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I looked into it. I could not find which one was actually shot first.
Why did they do it the same year? You would think that the studio would be
well,
like...
Well, you're not talking about studio. There's no studios involved with these films.
Well, there was a studio release of They Live. Was there a studio release for Frogtown?
There was not a studio release of They Live. It was done by a smaller distributor. Yes, it went to theaters, but nothing...
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, Fox. I'm trying to think... shit. You're going to make me look like a dumbass because I don't know who... he signed a three-picture deal,
yeah.
Carpenter did, after the failure of The Thing, and kind of bounced back with Christine. He did a three-picture deal. It was Alive Films. I would have kicked myself with it. Alive Films. Basically, did They Live and Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
He wanted to do some low-budget films that he could shoot in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Be close to his raising a son. But they weren't huge studio tentpole films, not at all. All
right.
And this film was done by Roger Corman. This was a burgeoning straight-to-video market.
Well, which is weird because when
this
I...
This is the heyday of straight-to-video films.
Which is weird because when you say to me straight-to-video, I think lower budget. But actually, I think the budget on the frog costumes were actually pretty decent. Now, like a lot of the secondary characters, they weren't that complex. But the main characters had great animatronics.
They switched
masks.
Around some of the frog suits.
They probably used them
a couple times, but because you never saw like the good frogs in the same scene together. We'll get to that. But no, this was 1988. They were released the same year. Like I said, I couldn't find out which one was shot first.
Yeah.
In my mind, I want to say Frogtown was only because I saw a huge growth
between.
It seemed
his
to me
acting.
Like this might have been his first time on a film set. And that first time is when you really...
Or it could be strength of director.
Well, I'm not discounting what Carpenter did, but just that first time, nerves on a film set,
yeah.
And being around some experience.
Yeah.
There's a lot of veteran actors in Frogtown where he could learn from and see how to do it. But this film let him be Rowdy Roddy.
Yeah.
But you could. There's little moments, I'll point out, where you see him
trying to grow.
So I want to say he did this first... And then by the time he got to They Live, he had a little bit of experience. And then Carpenter, being the best director in the history of mankind, took him to that next level. Because, my God, he rocks that movie. Nobody could do that movie better. I'm convinced nobody could play that Nada in They Live better. And that's not just because there's wrestling in it. It's because he just sells it. He sells that working man. And everything he's ever done is in his hands. And he just... Carpenter said, "I cast him because of his hands."
Yeah,
and you get that sense. But enough about They Live. We're talking about Hell Comes to Frogtown, directed by Donald G. Jackson, who did a shitload of low budget exploitation
Still
films,
doing.
Including two sequels to Frogtown. I didn't know that going in. And R.J. Kaiser, who has only done three films. This one being the second, the third being one of our personal guilty pleasures, Death Ring.
Oh, that I did not know.
Death Ring is a World's Most Dangerous Game, I think 92?
Yeah.
I think 92, where he brilliantly cast on the video box, Swayze, Norris, who's the other? McQueen. Only it was Don Swayze, Patrick's brother. We talked about this in the Expendables episode.
Yeah.
Chad McQueen, Steve's son, and Aaron Norris, Chuck's brother. But it's a World's Most Dangerous Game where Billy Drago, who's also unbelievably awesome, hunts these guys down on an island.
I just love that.
Swayze. Norris. McQueen. He's dead, but we got him. Well, Don Swayze. But it's a really entertaining film. But that's all he's ever done. But keep in mind, he's been working... He is one of the top dialogue editors
and ADR editors.
Really?
He does all the Nolan films like Interstellar and Dark Knight. He's the head ADR. He's a sound guy.
Yeah.
But his directorial career ended with Death Ring in 1992, which was a shame. It's a damn shame. Somebody out there give R.J. Kaiser another shot at the brass ring.
In a world. In a world. Swayze, McQueen, Norris. No, no, not those ones.
Completely different. I think that was like they had to like put an asterisk. Not those ones.
Not those ones.
First thing you see pop up is the New World Pictures logo, that red. Which you've, if just you, anybody a fan of 80s action horror exploitation films, you know that logo.
I got that little tingle when you start to see those old classics. Vestron.
That lets Orion. Me know we're in for a good time is what that lets me know. It's a Vestron. it's a very much a Vestron or a what's the other one? Well, it used to be AIP, which was Corman before. Basically, New World was started by Roger Corman, his brother Gene.
Yeah.
I want to say 1970-ish. They left American International Pictures, AIP, and they started New World Pictures. And they basically spent the next 15 years, up till about 85, 92, I think, just dishing up crazy exploitation films, one after another. Yeah. All the women in prison movies, a lot of cheap horror movies, slasher films,
yeah,
sci-fi film. I mean, they did all, culminating in Hell Comes to Frogtown. But no, you're right. That logo just lets you know. AFCO Embassy was the other one I'm thinking.
Yes,
they do like Escape from New York and just love those early logos. You need to come up with one of those for our video projects.
Oh, great!
Very retro stylized,
very grainy looking.
That's what all the. That's all the hipsters will respond to.
Do it.
I want something on my desk by Monday.
But we need
Cody,
to keep,
build me a desk.
We need to keep it local though. That'll get them on board.
Did you look up what Heather Honey was, by the way?
I did not.
What are you sitting over there doing? Come on.
I'm listening. I'm contributing.
I'm liking this local logo.
But many of those movies that New World Pictures put out, these exploitation films. As a young man, I discovered through USA Up All Night, which was the weekend late night television on USA Channel.
USA Up hosted, All Night.
Hosted by the one and only Ron DeShear.
Ron DeShear.
Which we all know.
Bob Hope.
Thank you, sir. She was a very buxom, beautiful, and pretty funny chick who hosted these movies. Yeah. On USA Up All Night.
Especially the teenage boys.
She was like Elvira without the...
The goth.
The goth. She just was like, hey, I've got big boobs. And she was fun.
Yeah.
She was a really fun chick. So, Hell Comes to Frogtown, the first time and only time I ever saw it.
I thought about Up All Night.
Well, dude, that's where I discovered this film.
Yeah.
And one of our Twitter followers, actually, when I announced this week that we were watching this, he's like... Holy shit, I haven't seen that since USA Up All Night. And I'm like, you and me both. I was like, we all watch this on Hulu Plus, correct?
Yes.
It is out there on Hulu Plus. Yeah. Check it out. They actually have some exploitation 80s stuff that they don't have on Amazon or Netflix streaming. So give it a whirl. But no, I got this from USA Up All Night with Ron DeShear. Where did you... Had you seen it? You'd never seen it before, correct?
I'd never seen it.
The first time I ever saw this was USA.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was like, you know...
They played this a lot. This is one of their kind of go-to films.
Really? It's a weird that I got out of that era without ever seeing it.
Oh, man. That you know... As a kid, I mean, when you're stuck at home and there's no other... I mean, that was the show. Ron DeShear. And who was the later guy?
Is that Joe Bob?
Joe Bob Briggs.
Joe Bob Briggs, yeah.
Joe Bob Briggs.
Well, I never had cable growing up. So I'd either see it at relatives' house or friends' houses. And then when I started dating my first serious girlfriend in high school, who I'd later marry, and she jokes about this all the time, it was a relationship built on 50% I liked her, but she had cable. If I wanted to watch Beavis and Butthead, I had to be at her house. and it happened USA Up All Night would be, and every once in a while we'll be watching a Saturday night, late night TV, and she'll be seeing like Bikini Academy or Vice Academy. She'll be like, is this one of those fucking movies? She doesn't care. Is this one of those movies that you used to stay up till 3 in the morning watching at my house? Well, she'd go to bed. I didn't have cable. I'd just stay up all night watching TV at her house.
You just kept waiting for one of those guys that was editing to make a slip so you could just see a little bit of nipple. Anything.
Yeah. What is Heather Honey?
Apparently, Heather Honey comes from, is just honey made from a particular type of plant.
Yeah, wait a minute. European honey's made
heath,
from bees.
Heathland or moorland. It's kind of a Scottish honey.
A Scottish honey. Boy, what a specific note you're supposed
exactly.
to.
Exactly.
And that was the smell, right? We're supposed to smell that? Yeah, an aroma note. We're supposed to smell heather honey.
I can't smell
I love the pairing guy because their food and drink is usually spot on. Like, this is going to match perfectly. But then they give you those notes like, it would taste slight hints as if you were drinking yak's milk from Mont. How am I supposed to know what that...
It's true.
In a cigar.
It's true. The beer, whatever they tell you to drink has been really consistently a good pairing.
Yeah, it actually has.
And this is working for me pretty good, but you're right. That some of the far out there...
but then they throw in that other one, like butter per se. You know, like, really? I'm looking for butter in my cigar.
Tuttle got the butter.
In all seriousness...
Now I'm jealous of Tuttle. Okay?
Am I almost to the point where you hit the butter?
Yeah, I think so. Excited. Yeah. Right,
we'll I am not tasting... you know what? I'm going to sit over here quietly now.
In a cigar, Cody smells no butter.
I want delicious butter.
You get a slight flavor of Tribbles.
I've been dieting a lot.
Fictional Star Trek. That's a Star Trek character.
I've just been dieting a lot. I really want some butter.
No,
anything that I've got.
Let's dig into this. It's a short film.
Yeah.
We begin with a female voiceover telling us that late in the 20th century, there rose a difference of opinion, and the next thing you see is just this just series of bombs, nuclear blasts.
And I love that. You know, it's like, you know, most, this is a dystopian film, and so, you know, you expect that either they're just going to jump right in or there's going to be that narrative. A lot of times
I love the narrative.
A lot of times they either do like the little flash card where you can actually read it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or there's someone speaking, and in this one, it's just someone talking. There's no card,
but it's one sentence. Late in the 20th century, there was a difference of opinion. That's it. They don't explain what the difference of opinion
was. I'm sorry, I loved it.
They don't explain who the countries were. There was just an argument. And they decimated
these
the earth.
These guys, they really hated each other. They were upset.
Well, she does say that the idea behind nuclear war was that we fire a few missiles, everybody gets scared, then they're drawn to the negotiation table, and they solve their thing. But it's like, that's not how it went. In 10 days, 10,000 years of progress was down the tubes, and
I felt like they, you know, I was waiting for her just to, like, you know, there'd be a pause and her, like, what a bunch of assholes, huh? You know?
This movie is never self-referential like that. It's never like breaks the fourth wall and looks at the crowd like, look, we know this is a crazy sci-fi movie about frog people. It never does that. It takes itself pretty damn seriously, the whole movie. But no,
I
like it because the dialogue gets a bit cheeky. Not like breaking the fourth plane.
No, but it's a goofball exploitation film. But they.
I just realized it's a little bit Whedon before Whedon.
Whedon-esque?
Joss Whedon. Joss? Yeah. Because, you know, his claim to fame is he'll take the stereotypical situation, spin it on its head, draw humor from it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a couple of scenes, like, later in the movie where the strippers was like, I actually think she can do it. Or not. I mean, just that little kind of tongue-in-cheek stuff that Whedon does.
It's a fun script. And there's some fun little...
Now I know where Whedon got all of his writing secrets. Up all night.
Let's get trending tonight, hashtag Whedon-esque. Of course, we don't do our shows live, so that will mean nothing. So after a very cool kind of stylized video opening sequences where we see our heroes and our main cast kind of in action, very 80s
everything
screen, VHS. It's kind of cool looking, though. Its own kind of... It wasn't retro then, and it looks, and it's very retro now, but it's kind of a cool opening sequence. made a video graphics of all the main characters in action. We find our hero, Samuel Hell. We'll just call him Hell, because that's kind of what they do.
Yeah.
Sam Hell.
Sam Hell. What in the Sam Hell?
What in the Sam Hell? He's being beaten, and he's captured. He's strapped to a chair being beaten by a law enforcement officer, Captain Devlin, played by this guy. Oh, my God. The one and only raspy-voiced badass. He's been in like 300 fucking
things.
Yeah,
he's been in everything.
William Smith. Not only was he in Red Dawn, which we grew up kind of with him in that, but he was Conan's dad in the first Conan.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was literally, and Todd, I figured this would pick up with you more than anybody, he was literally played a bad guy in every single 80s and 90s detective show. Like, you look at his IMDb, it's like Airwolf, Simon and Simon, Riptide, Magnum, 90s, Walker, Texas Ranger. Like, he plays a bad guy, and he has literally stepped his toes in every single
TV
every TV title. Series ever made. He's played a bad guy.
Wait, well, what was the Clint Eastwood movie? Any Which Way But Loose?
Yeah,
Yes, he played the bare knuckle brawl.
The second, right?
The second one.
Any Which Way You Can.
Thank you. Which Way You Can.
Yeah, I forgot about him in that one.
And like everyone else in this movie, he also like had two or three appearances of different people in the show Hunter, which was a big favorite of mine. I love Hunter.
Oh, Hunter! Remember Dee Dee, his partner?
You know?
Do I ever?
Hey, Dee Dee.
Hey, Dee Dee.
So this guy, you know, if you don't know who we're talking about, look him up. You'll know him immediately.
Yeah, even if
his voice, like me, you don't have to see him. You'll just know his
like
voice.
I never remember names, but the moment I see that face, I'm like,
You think you're pretty smart, don't you, Hunter? Like, he's just got that voice.
And that's really honestly what made him so good.
His voice.
I mean, obviously, you know, he...
And like most raspy-voiced chain-smoking guys from the 70s, he's still alive. He's 82. He's still kicking.
He's eating those packs of cigarettes like candy, man. Gotta love those guys. You gotta love them. Gotta love them.
He did a bunch of Airwolves, too, which that gets instant credibility.
Hell yeah.
He's beating the piss out of our hero, Sam Hell, tied to this thing. Apparently, Sam Hell was arrested for sexually assaulting Devlin's daughter.
Knocked her up.
And as he's beating Sam Hell, these two medical technicians come in. One of them, played by Sandahl Bergman, the lovely love interest from Conan.
Mm. She is, yes.
She's lovely.
I likes.
Not a unique beauty.
She really made her thing with, she got cast for many roles in several things for Bob Fosse. A lot of the dance musical,
which is weird because her dancing in this movie is some of the most horrid.
But you, well, I mean,
purposeful.
When we get there, I mean, you can see if you really look. I mean, which I did.
I was about to say
she has a dancer's body.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It was.
It's not my style of dance, but you could tell that she's a professional dancer.
Oh yes.
Hey.
Cheyenne, stage number two.
Cheyenne, stage number two. Cheyenne, stage number two.
No, what I liked about her, obviously her body is beautiful, but her eyes are gorgeous as well. She's got those big eyes that kind of just
beam. I've always liked her. And she has a very warm, not the world's greatest actress, but she has personality. She's a very unique kind of screen presence. Going back to Conan, she did a real horrible, what's that horrible sci-fi movie, another dystopian movie where she's the only one left. It's called like 10, or it's got like a very simple like letter name or a number name. It's just horrible. We couldn't even do it on the show. It's so horrible. Like,
that's saying a lot. Oh my God, that's saying a lot.
I can't think of it, but
it's so bad I don't even want to give it any. But it was the worst movie, one of the worst movies supposedly ever made. And
yeah,
I agree with it. I did. But anyway, she's one of these medical technicians. They come in, they're like, wait, Devlin, you can't.
But the other one that came in, Edie Bird.
Yeah, who's she?
Oh, man.
The African-American actress.
She's been in so many other things, but the one that always sticks out with me, Doc Hollywood, Michael J. Fox.
Oh, and there
she plays the nurse at the little small town hospital. She plays a lot of nurses.
She's one of She's one of those. Well, you know, big boisterous black woman. I hate to say it because it's kind of a stereotypical character archetype. But yeah, the moment she came in, it was like my Tuttle sense was going. I should recognize this person.
I
did too, but I couldn't place it.
Well, in this,
and I believe this is the second time in 2 weeks that Doc Hollywood has come up on the show.
And so many,
please don't
the opening,
that.
The so many little things throughout just this the opening, the setup for this within like the 10-15 minutes. Every single actor,
yeah,
Smith, Bergman. I mean, just they pop out all those people, and you know, and when I first saw her, I mean, it took me a second. I'm like, wait a second, oh my God. Doc Hollywood. That going back, that's one of those movies that I'll stop and watch every time.
Yeah. Well, really? She comes in with Bergman.
Doc Hollywood?
Yeah.
Were you the one that mentioned it the other week? Someone threw out a Doc Hollywood.
I loved you.
I thought it was you, actually.
No. I've seen it. I don't mind it, but...
You closet Doc Hollywood lover.
I don't know. It sounds like he's not in the closet.
No, I guess he's out of the closet.
He's here. He likes Michael J. Fox. Get used to it.
No, like Jimmy Warner, not Michael J. Fox.
You guys can have your Doc Holliday. I'm all
Hollywood.
About Doc Hollywood. What about a t-shirt with Michael J. Fox in his lab coat, or his doctor's coat, like, I'll be your Huckleberry. Ironically play on. You put that in Urban Outfitters. You put that in Urban Outfitters in the window, you're a millionaire.
Note to self. Make t-shirts.
Copyright Tuesday Night Cigar Club 2015. Well, they come in and they say, hey, quit beating him. Your daughter is not pressing charges. Turns out she's pregnant, which is like, apparently we live in a world where there's a very small number of fertile women after the nuclear war.
And then 68% of men. Yeah, 68% of the men's male population is no longer.
Correct. We're very vastly outnumbered by women. They're running the show.
The women are now trying to
repopulate.
They're still at war, apparently. So you don't. But you don't. It doesn't specify where the war is taking place. They just need more people. We need people.
See, correct. I didn't know if they were actually in a physical war or if it's kind of like the '80s, the war on infertility or the war on population.
I think. Well, after the obviously the population was decimated by the nuclear war. Now we need to repopulate because as it goes on, they rescue him from the sheriff.
From Devlin.
And then they immediately show him being like, he goes from being like tied into this one chair where he's all bloody.
To tied into a laboratory chair because apparently our boy Roddy has a very valuable loaded weapon between his legs that makes him extremely essential to the resistance as purposes as far as reproducing.
Roddy is potent.
Kate style.
His swimmers swim.
One of the med tech that Sandhal Bergman from Conan plays is named Sprangle.
Spangle.
Threw an R in there. Spangle. Yeah. Spangle.
Or is it Spangler?
No, Spangle.
Spangle.
It's Spangle. Yeah. Horrible name.
Well, she's patriotic.
But next thing, as Cody said, next thing we see, he's in a laboratory, medical lab, where he's strapped to a chair, much like what he's just getting the shit beat out of him for. Oh, and Devlin did not, the police guy did not like this. He didn't like women ruling the show. He's like, a lot of us think that these women have too much, you know, on their plates. And he's an old-timey guy, which when you talk like this, you kind of have to be.
Devlin,
you sound kind of funny if you talk about liberated women in this voice. I think they're doing a great job.
They used to be in the kitchen, and now they're running things.
Bitter fuck.
He actually makes a move to stab. I'm not going to call him Sam Hill. I'm sorry. He actually makes a move to stab.
Feel free to call him Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper, whatever.
And Conan's love squeeze flips him, does the little judo on him. Says, "Get on out of here. We're gonna bust you down to the border."
Yeah, Bergman kicks his ass and demotes him to border guard when he's against them taking Roddy away. So next time we see Roddy in this lab. There's signs everywhere, like anti-condom bumper stickers in the lab, pro-reproduction. Like, they need human beings.
If you've ever played the game Fallout and you look at the government propaganda that's all throughout the game series, it's like the 1940s, 1950s government-style posters. That's what that reminded me of. Don't use a condom.
It was funny.
Your fertility is your weapon.
Yeah, it was
just stuff like that.
But just as they're is they inform him that he has the highest sperm. Roddy Piper has the highest sperm count they've ever registered in the entire country. He's left a literal trail of pregnant chicks everywhere he's traveled, Kate style. And the government's willing to wipe his criminal record clean.
So he should be an NFL football player, is what you're telling me.
He should be a wide receiver for the New York Jets. Yes, he should. As long they're going to set him free and wipe his record clean, as long as he's willing to go back out there and keep doing what he's doing.
Keep knocking him up.
With his all-powerful ding-a-ling, he has a mission, and they want him to do it. It's like when they go and they release Rambo in part two from the camp. Like, we need you. We need you, Sam Hill. Only instead of...
We don't need you to defeat the enemies and kill everybody.
No, go forth and multiply.
Go get laid.
And what guy wouldn't say, like, well, you know, and they pull out paperwork and contracts and he signs it, like, way. You know, yeah, all right, you know.
Right here is when I knew I was in for a treat of a movie.
Oh, you sure are. I mean, just the premise alone, Roddy Piper being captured by the government for his intense ding-a-ling powers.
This totally took me back to like 16, 17 years old watching these kind of exploitation films. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great immediate, you know, within the first 10 minutes, you know what kind of movie this is going to be. I never told you guys this, but just between friends, I was also made a similar offer by our government due to the off-the-charts superhuman sperm that I'm carrying around in my sack. They wanted me to travel cross-country nailing broads, planting my seeds in hot chicks, much like Johnny Appleseed kind of traveled around the country. It was called Operation Appleseed. They wanted me to better the future outlook for the country by doing what I...
Spreading your genes around?
Spreading my genes around the grand old U.S. of A., but I kind of just started this podcast, and I couldn't really do that to you guys or the Tuesday Night Cigar Club. I didn't think it was fair, so I'm not Steve Rogers. I didn't step up to the plate for my country. I turned my back to my country.
Kate, I want to thank you for saving your sperm for the Tuesday Night Cigar Club.
I don't really know how to respond to that.
And now we're here in Abraham Lincoln's forehead. My load's unspilt. So far. It's early on in the night.
He's very frustrated.
Incredibly frustrated. That's the Avengers character you won't see in the Marvel Universe.
Or maybe you will.
Backed up man. Good morning. Shut up. So Hell, Sam Hell, Roddy Piper. You know what? We'll just call him Piper. And it's Hell is weird. It's because he. So Roddy sets out in a really souped up kind of pink. Is that a Studebaker or what kind of car is that?
I don't know what kind of.
But it's an old SUV.
I would figure that for some reason. I was like, maybe I don't know much about this world at this point, obviously. But if you're talking about we're at war and many other things. I'm going to drive out of this quote-unquote medical military base inside of a just rolling pink, you know, van.
But women are running the thing.
Women are running the thing. But the military vehicles are going to be pink. They're Avon cars with 50 caliber guns on the top.
It's kind of like Robin Williams in Good Morning Vietnam. Now, why are you wearing green? I can't see you.
Right?
You walk out and the first thing you actually see beyond the two med tech nurses of Bergman and Bird is you see I had to look it up because I recognized her.
Centella?
Yes.
Centinella?
Centinella Secvarel.
I didn't.
Was her
I
name.
Didn't know. I didn't
you, recognize, do you recognize her from Runaway?
Yeah.
The hooker?
Yes.
Yeah. The Tom Selleck movie Runaway?
Yeah, I didn't. I remember the movie. I don't remember the character.
She's hot.
At the risk of getting in trouble with my wife, she is smoking.
She's so hot.
And that's the whole point, because she comes out, and she is smoking. It shows you she's the badass. She's sitting next to a 60 cal, and she's got her little cigarillo. Hey,
even those domineering female government politicians that run this new society are okay with smoking. Take that, America.
Land of the free.
Land of the free. She's hot. She's by far the most beautiful woman in this film.
I can't expand on my thoughts on this. My podcast is monitored.
So she's their bodyguard. He's setting out with her, Spangle, Sandahl Bergman, the med tech, and Roddy Piper. The three of them are going to take this pink Studebaker, whatever the hell, 80s SUV.
Because they got a mission.
They got a mission, and they're going to go out there. And they leave to the tune of women humming when Johnny comes marching home. Which is awesome. But it's women humming it. And it's, this movie makes a lot of kind of cool kind of artistic choices, sound-wise and picture-wise.
It works. I mean, you know.
It works great.
It such a short opening and such a lead-up to the basic premise. But you're like,
I will say that
makes perfect sense.
I will say this, though.
I'm on board.
I never, throughout the film, there's a thing in 80s films, especially these low-budget 80s exploitation films. Costuming was like, let's go to the Salvation Army and whatever we find.
Yeah, yeah.
Piper's pirate kind of, it was like a...
It's like a loincloth.
It was a series of like drapes coming down and then like a denim jacket.
Well, we totally forgot about the cod piece that he's wearing.
You know what, you're right.
He's got this loincloth covering it.
They installed a giant military-issued cod piece.
/ chastity belt. They now control his junk.
They do. It's got a little alarm on it, and it's plastique. There's plastique in there.
It's got to explode.
Everything in the 80s was plastique.
He basically signed away his junk
where if he tries...
It's now government equipment.
If he tries to run away from his two female companions, if he gets beyond certain yardage, his junk will blow up. What's the
every
other
man's
stipulation?
She can like.
Oh, he has. If he gets too far, it will electrically shock him.
Correct.
To incapacitate him.
The electroshock is from the earring. If he gets too far, it'll actually
blow up and just blow his wiener off.
If he tries to cut it off, it'll.
But Spangle controls the codpiece with her earrings. Yeah. If she rubs one, it'll shock his wiener. And then if, God forbid, she touches the other one, just blow his Johnson off.
Every man's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
She really did have him by the balls.
She had him literally by the balls. In these early scenes, Piper is pretty wired. Like Rowdy Roddy from the wrestling ring wired.
Who you ladies think? This is insanity. Like,
he's just so amped up.
Let me tell you, sister.
And just like crazy and... You know, it's much more in line with his wrestling persona than the more subtle stuff he'd do later on. And they live, and like he did, just like do you? You know, don't. What's my inspiration here? You're your inspiration. Just be Rowdy Roddy Piper. Yeah. You girls are crazy. Like, this is insane. Like he's just, but it's lovable. I mean, you hired him because you like that character.
Well, that's like going back a little bit for the Devlin scene when Devlin's trying to kill him and the girls come in and save him. And the camera cuts over to Piper, who blows him a little kiss and then does a little...
Yeah.
Just loved it.
Well, like I said, They Live, and this came out in 1988. The only other thing that came out around the same time where he did was SummerSlam, this wrestling thing, which ties in our Summerfest beer.
There you go.
I'm going to tie the beer into this one, Kate.
SummerSlam, Summerfest.
Suck it.
Sneaky. So sneaky.
For those of you who are scoring at home, Cade has tied in the beer
to the
movie.
Little do you guys know, they've put a remote codpiece on me. If I don't tie the beer, the cigar, and the film in, I have a beeping noise starts going off. And
that was Cody who did the codpiece tying. I videotaped.
It's neither here nor there. But yeah, he's very...
You girls are crazy. You girls are whack. This is insane.
This is America.
He's very Piper early on in the scene, which is fine and which is fun. Although he does show a glimpse of restraint and pause that he'd really show more in They Live when Sandahl Bergman, Spangle, asks him, don't you ever take anything seriously?
I used to.
And he says, you know, I used to take everything seriously. And then they blew it up. And it's just like no actor could say it better. And it's like, well, okay, maybe some actors.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's a little hyperbole.
I thought he sold that really well.
He did.
And it's like, he's just a character that's all over the place. It was like they wanted a mixture of Han Solo and Decker from Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
It was just, he was,
I think his direction was just like, hey, we want a little bit Star Wars, a little bit Blade Runner.
No, that is a good point, because like when he would tone down, like, the, you know, they're telling him he's got to go, you know, hump everybody that's fertile in the dead. He's got that little boyish kind of the Harrison Ford confused.
Oh, I saw a lot of,
like,
Han Solo.
You know, it's almost like, you know, wait, you're gonna pay me to do this?
Yeah,
like, I, yeah, totally, I could do it. I mean, but
there was a lot of Han Solo, and then I thought he went kind of, you know, because they were like, it's dystopian, it's futuristic.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he was trying to, maybe there was a director's choice, a little bit of Blade Runner.
All right, now quick question: when did Blade Runner come out compared to this?
86. It came out the same year as Conan.
Yeah.
83.
Okay.
Could be something to that.
Yeah.
83, 84, right there. Yeah.
Blade Runner is pretty influential. I got it as one of the desktops on my lovely computer.
So I you know, when he says that I cared about everything until they blew it up, it was like, oh, wow.
He's not just snarky.
Yeah, he's got a little glimpse of chops, of acting chops in there. Cause
yeah.
You never see that in The Ring. You certainly would never see that. So as they're driving, it's revealed in the car ride that the green mutants that are a result of the nuclear war, the Greeners, as they call them, led by Commander Toady, have kidnapped several fertile human women, either for ransom or to be a part of Toady's harem of
I was really disappointed girls. That his commanding attaché got cut from the movie, Corporal Ribbit. They could not have been just more crappy on these names, man.
I believe on the DVD there is a soliloquy of Corporal Ribbit giving a midnight charge into battle. The budget couldn't...
You have to make concessions.
Can do it. Well played, sir. Samuel Hell, Roddy, and the ladies are going straight into Frogtown, we learn. That's their mission. To get these fertile women back and get them pregnant.
Yeah.
That's what Roddy's there for. They're going to get these girls back.
They got to get them back because they got to repopulate the planet.
Roddy's going to get them pregnant. And then right as she says, we're going to get them back so you can insert your penis into them and impregnate them. One of the best cuts I've ever seen in film. As soon as she says that, we're going to get them back, and then you're going to penetrate them and give your seed. They cut to, what's the girl's, the tough girl, I'm never going to get this name right.
Sentinella.
I keep wanting to say concertina, but that's not right.
I keep wanting to say Centronella.
What is it? It's like Sentinella.
Sentinella?
Yeah, I think it is.
Sentinella, that's right. Yeah. You're going to be responsible for...
If you just want to call her hotness, we'll understand.
Well, right when she says that, we're going to get these girls back and you're going to stick your penis in them and impregnate them, boom, it's a cut to Sentinella putting the gas can spout inside the pink car and then, like, kind of ramming it in there, in and out a little bit. That was not unintentional.
Dude, just shove it in there.
Dude, you just show it. It's an insanely long gas can nozzle, and she just kind of slides it in and kind of jostles it a little bit.
Message.
I loved it. It's just little things in these movies. They don't cost anything. Just a little forethought into your editing. It goes a long way.
You really got the sense that, you know, all right, I'll do it, but I'm not going to enjoy it.
Best cut ever. So while they're filling up with gas, Hell makes a run for it. Roddy's like, I'm going to go take a piss, and he just takes off running. That's when they call him the ECR, his cock piece. I don't know what the ECR stood for. Electronic cock.
Yeah.
Restraint,
maybe? Electronic cock restraint?
We'll go with that. That's what it stands for.
His cock piece clamps down and starts shocking the hell out of him, sending electrical charges through his nuts. And Piper totally sells it like a wrestling move, like just so over the top. I mean, it's pure Roddy Roddy Piper. Just, oh my god!
There's something checking my penis.
There's no subtlety to it at all.
No,
it's totally crazy.
He's selling it to the, like, back person in the arena.
It'd be like he sold a headbutt to the last. You're right, the guy in the cheap sheets in the arena. He sells it the exact same, which is what you want in this movie.
or a boot to the face. He says,
"This is no time for subtlety."
Turns out Spangle, like we said, controls his cock and balls now with her magical earrings. And if he goes too far, the plastic will just blow his wiener off. So that night, they have to camp out that night. They have a long ways to drive into the restricted mutant territory to get to Frogtown. That night, she comes out of her tent, Spangle, the scientist, the medtech, wearing some camouflage lingerie to get him all worked up and aroused, to tease him. Because apparently they have to keep his...
Yeah, the field book says...
The field book says they have to keep his potency at high levels all the time, which means you have to constantly keep this guy aroused. But she accidentally sets off his codpiece, the plastique part of it again. And again, he's hilarious. Every time this thing goes off, his reaction... Oh my God! Just thrashing and just the...
Yeah, but I mean... Like you just let's be honest. I mean, if you had the thing on, know, like if some all of a sudden you start hearing a beeping, but dude, he'd be freaking out too.
But his it's just every reaction's a wrestler's reaction.
I was about to say, I think it would be more like Buzzsaw from Running Man.
I was waiting for that later when the frog's taking the chainsaw to the. But his reactions are just priceless because at this point it's just pure wrestling, pure Rowdy. Did anybody else notice Sentinella during that whole scene sitting there like the platypus polishing the same part of her gun?
Oh my God, that was the first thought I did. I was like, dude, that's Rob the Platypus.
That was the cleanest, shiniest.
Check out our website, folks. There's a link to a video we did, Expendables spoof called The Unreliables, and one of our members, the Platypus, sits on the couch and polishes his rifle the entire time. And much like Sentinella, it's not his whole rifle, it's just one specific part of the barrel. She just sits there polishing that thing the whole night long. But later on, after Spangle goes to bed, Sentinella strips down butt-ass naked. Hey, no.
Hey.
Hey. And she tries polishing his flesh
pistol. His weapon. I've heard a lot about you. I'm infertile, but I want to hear if the rumors are true.
She just wants to know if the rumors are true about Roddy's
equipment.
But the crafty med tech, Spangle, wakes up and breaks the two up just before...
You're out of uniform, Corporal.
Just before things get into bed.
Yeah, you're out of uniform, Corporal.
She's butt-ass naked.
Can't go wasting any of that precious... You know what? I'm not even going to continue with that sentence because there's no way it can end
don't.
Well.
No.
Spooge. He has precious spooge. It's valuable to the... Hey, for now on, let's see if we can just say spooge and see if Tuttle knocks his microphone over.
Oh, wait. That was for four on my list here.
I carved in the table things to never say spooge.
Wow. This show is ruining everything we built up. All the rules are meaningless today.
Hey, season one's over. Season two, we have to bring out the big guns.
Guess what, guys? So we've gotten to a good point in the film. They're on their mission. They're camping out. Let's revisit the beer and cigar quick. Guess what? I got the butter.
You did?
I hate both.
I'm telling you.
No butter? I have got nothing. No butter. I can't believe that it's
I can't butter. Believe it.
You know what it's like, though, for me? It's more of a
margarine?
Buttered toast.
Oh, okay.
Oh, now you're just rubbing it in. Go fuck yourself.
It's more like a heavily buttered stack of flapjacks with maple syrup and bacon. Sausage links.
I use poppy seed flapjacks, pumpkin spice flapjacks, some Stevie cakes.
Well, they're actually kale cakes. They're like pancakes, but they suck.
No, I've really it's funny because I remember when I first lit it, I did not think it was going to be that special. I thought it was going to be just a round the mill cigar, but it, actually the complexity just exploded after the first third.
The last two thirds just
I'm nubbing this already. I slowed down a little bit to kind of just enjoy it.
I got no butter,
but
I am
more.
Getting a little bit of the almond, the vanilla. But seriously, I just want butter. All right,
I want the damn butter.
You want to take
just get me a stick of butter and I will light it on fire.
Do you want to take a couple drags of mine?
No, I don't know.
See if the butter's in there.
You know what? You're finishing up, and unless you get something, some butter or something, we'll come back to it. But this thing is
beautifully transition between almonds, this just gorgeous butter. I mean, if you can't experience this butter,
you're just rubbing it in. I'm going to kill both of you.
I'm also picking up notes of sour cream and pepperoni pizza.
I don't know. It seems a little bit...
I'm going to break one of these bottles and stab both of you repeatedly.
It's a good cigar. I've enjoyed all the Monty's we've done. I really like that Espada. That Espada, to me, was the most complex Monty. Maybe I enjoyed that Espada more than the Monty Texas.
Really?
I love that
Espada. See, I disagree. I like the Texas more than the Espada, and I like the Espada.
I know you didn't like your first Espada experience, but on the show you really liked the pairing.
Yeah. That second Espada kind of it warmed me up to it, but I really love that Texas. The epic that they serve up is nice.
This is what they're coming at us with. This is our classic Monte Cristo line.
I can see it.
Our Ford truck. Our thing that we're always going to go back to. I think you picked a good one.
Yeah.
I think it's a good smell. Butter aside, are you enjoying it?
I am.
I mean, it's definitely on the mild side of me.
Yeah, I was about to say. I think it should be in your wheelhouse because of that.
Right in my wheelhouse. As I've said before, anything, quote unquote, Connecticut shade wrap, I don't know what it is about that flavor that it gives to a cigar, but I love it.
Yeah.
Well, good. And it's going great with the Summerfest. Man, that Summerfest is
perfect for a hot summer.
I'm much more cooler now than when we started. Mm-hmm. The beer has everything to do with that.
Yes, it does.
It gets hot in here on Mount Rushmore inside Abraham
Lincoln's forehead. Who'd have thought? This far north.
Who'd have thought, huh? But the beer is taking my internal temperature down. It's interesting.
The bad thing about it is it's like I can't remember the name of that beer, but it was the one that we just drank like crazy because it was so light and crisp. This is kind of going that same way.
It was in the submarine. I guess maybe we were at such a low depth, our memory is kind of...
The pressure kind of... Not like altitude, it's pressure.
It wasn't the Hans Pils. It wasn't the Murphy's Red. What did we do for Terminator?
I don't know. I could have sworn it was like... It wasn't Sympathy for the Lager. I'll have to look at the website.
It reminds me a lot of that, only with just a ton of more interesting stuff going on in the back end, which to me, I say it over and over again, don't give me a boring beer. This beer fits that to a T. Great pairing.
By the way, the nub on this is...
Is the nub...
It opens
nub's
up.
Rocking, huh?
Yeah, it opens up.
Let's keep chugging here. But another good cigar pairing guide pairing. Good lager. And just a really interesting cigar. Once they've entered now deep into mutant hostile territory.
Deep into Frogtown territory.
They encounter a runaway pilgrim girl who had managed to escape from Frogtown. And they start chasing her down. A fertile runaway pilgrim girl.
And this kind of really set up, you know, the links to which they're, you know, it gave you an idea how far they're willing to go because they have
fertile women apparently are.
So I looked up from my iPad because I watched this smoking out on the deck. Did they tie her up or did they find her tied up?
Oh no, they tied her up.
They tied her up.
She was running.
This scene in today's world
would not fly.
Well, it gets worse because not only did they tie her up. But Dr. Spangle quickly injects her with a syringe full of Dr. Huxtable's secret relaxation serum.
And
Bill Cosby juice.
And literally, the secret here is it's not so much that they even want to.
Now we're going to give her a chance to comply. Now we're going to take the syringe and we're going like, to mix it up.
Hey, we're here to help you.
Hold on.
No, we're going to.
Did you hear his... Bill Cosby?
I did. I was trying to kind of ignore it.
Oh, okay. If that's what you're going for, I support that. Sir, I've heard your Woody Allen. That is impressive. We don't need to hear that, Bill Cosby.
I always wondered why every time that I would eat one of those Jell-O pudding pops, why did he get so sleepy?
No, sorry.
Well, she injects the pilgrim girl. Well, they tie her up, and they inject her with this serum to get her super fertile and ready.
Dr. Huxtable's serum of realization.
Well, and then they basically explain to her, it's like, well, we didn't even ask her, but, you know, now you have to basically sleep with her.
Do you think the fact...
In fact, we captured her, so now rape her.
Do you think
Yes,
it is rape. Do you think the fact that I type Dr. Huxtable's secret relaxation elixir in my computer puts me on some kind of watch list
now? Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
It will.
Thanks, Obama.
Obama had nothing to do with Dr. Huxtable.
Thanks, Mitch McConnell. Am I getting more close on this?
I don't think so.
I'm just spouting names I know from...
Thanks, 42 women who came out against...
Thanks, Megyn Kelly.
I was about to say, thanks, 42 women who came out against Bill Cosby that nobody believed.
Was that your Woody Allen voice?
No.
No, that was me just talking a lot. I couldn't breathe. It's very similar to my Woody Allen voice. Yeah, so they drug her, and Spangle's like, all right, get on her and impregnate her.
Which, hell, at this point is like, whoa!
She didn't even brush her teeth!
Wait, and more to the point, you know, you kind of get to the idea, like, yeah, they talked...
That's not me saying that, folks. That's Rowdy's response. Like, whoa, just like that on the spot? She didn't brush her teeth! I like a little mood and atmosphere. And she's like, what, you have to have a connection? He's like, well, it wouldn't hurt.
It at least goes to show you that he's not, like, so vile and evil.
No,
like,
he's not. And he didn't commit sexual assault, what he was arrested for. He's just a Lothario who likes hooking up with chicks, but he needs some little chemistry.
He likes the chicks, and the chicks love him.
I said hello, and then we had sex.
He flat out says, I'm not a machine. I need some atmosphere, some chemistry. So Spangle, trained in seduction techniques.
Seduction techniques.
She says seduction techniques. does this very stiff striptease to arouse him, which was straight up Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies.
Yeah.
Only at least Jamie Lee Curtis took off those goggles. This chick leaves on these huge Harry Carey, just huge framed dark rimmed glasses while she's...
Here we are in the mutant frog town.
Hey, Norm. If you were a hot dog, would you eat yourself? I would. I'd slather myself with mustard. They're the thickest, craziest, dorkiest glasses. But her striptease goes nowhere. Like, I think he becomes more flaccid watching it. Which I did. I wasn't aroused at all. So to save her any further embarrassment, he tells her to put her blouse on and he'll do his job. You know, he signed the contract.
I don't want you to blow my junk up, so I will. Although, I will. You go in the tent and I'll rape this girl.
No. I think to make her feel better, he does tell her to take her glasses off so he can look at her while he's banging the chick. I think he does that to like make her feel kind of good about herself. Like, all right, you're going to serve a purpose here.
You're very pretty. She's just a giant mess. I'm going to look at you while I do this.
I'm going to bang this groggy pilgrim while you look at us with you know. Wasn't the groggy pilgrim a buffet-style restaurant that you and your brother wanted to open up on the highway a couple years back?
It might have been, but why do you have to bring that up now?
I was all for the groggy pilgrim. What was it going to be, like, breakfast buffet, lunch, dinner?
We served a lot of Jell-O pudding pops, okay?
Don't go to the pudding station. If you get invited to the pudding station, don't go. The groggy pilgrim. What would the sign be on that restaurant? Just like that chick, just kind of woozy. Slumped over a salad bar.
So wrong.
Hey, we didn't make this movie.
It's like a Guns N' Roses tour shirt.
This chick looked like that chick in Appetite for Destruction. Remember the artwork that they banned?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where, like, that alien was, like, raping her and all. This chick looked like that. But the next morning, the now alert groggy pilgrim girl chooses to fill them in on all the ins and outs of Frogtown, how this mutant world works.
Apparently she's capable of speech.
She wakes up just... in a best mood after her night with Rowdy Roddy.
Hey.
Who wouldn't?
Hey.
Kate style.
But you also find out that if you are pregnant, you're considered a national hero.
You're a queen. You're looked at as a queen in the new world.
You are taken care of.
They give her a tracking bracelet and tell her to keep going south. You're going to hit the border, and they're going to take care of you. They'll pick you up your signal. And
but it also, more to the question, like, well, okay... Tell you what, we've now impregnated you, so here's what we're going to do. We give you a bracelet, now you go walk that direction into the wasteland. Perhaps other mutants won't find you.
You are a national treasure, but Do you go ahead and
do
go?
Do you Cosby pulled that shit? Like, hey, next morning they're like, "What happened? Here's a put bracelet. This on. Start walking south. Somebody will find you, and your life will be great."
Don't say anything.
Phone rings a couple hours later. Phone booth two blocks away. Where am I supposed to? Don't know you.
I don't know you. It's wrong number. Sorry.
I'm needing to wonder where this is going. He'll,
sorry, not sorry.
Hell comes to the Cosby Show?
Hell comes to the Huxtables.
Well, she gives Roddy a big hug for impregnating her.
Yeah.
For raping her.
Basically.
And he looks over at Spangle with a shit-eating grin like, all right, this is what we're doing? Because our mission is I have to do this like 500 times. Hope you enjoyed it. She did. What a weird premise of a movie.
It's so 80s exploitation.
So she runs off. So the gang now, their plan is, Spangle's plan, is to do the old Jabba's Palace trick. Like where, was it Bosch? Handcuffed Chewie and went into Jabba's Palace as, I have a prisoner for you.
Basically, yes.
Was it Bosch? Am I getting
it? It wasn't Bosch.
It was Bosch.
No.
Princess Leia dressed up as a bounty hunter named Bosch.
Oh, I thought that was Bosk, the Trandoshan.
No. Bosk was the lizard.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, you're right. Bosk was
the lizard.
Was
okay.
The lizard. Bosch was who Princess Leia dressed up.
Holy
as.
Crap.
They got really
old on Star Wars.
Oh. They got really lazy there towards the end. Like,
dang.
How about Bosk? We've already used that. How about Bosch?
Oh.
Winner.
The H, the K, they're pretty close together on the out. All right, let's do it. Do it. Do it.
Crap.
So, Roddy puts Spangle in handcuffs, and she has this rack of lingerie in the back of the
this
car.
This med tech van is a cornucopia of.
They don't have a lot of ammunition. They have a shitload ton of lingerie.
Did you bring any more bullets? No, but I have some whips and chains.
So she changes into this kind of tattered fishnet stockings. Ropes.
I'm not gonna lie, I liked it.
We just borrowed this from a Whitesnake video.
And I liked it. I was like, my wife would look good in that.
I'll be honest, I never really found Sandel Bergman that attractive. Even Conan.
I had a little bit of a crush on her. I did. I mean, her face, she's an interesting beauty because her face is a little bit
bird
angular.
Face. It's got a bird face, it's got a beak.
I want to say angular. Be nice. Kind of like Adrienne Barbeau in a way.
Well, nothing like Adrienne Barbeau in a way.
Well, definitely not with that rack.
I mean, if you really look at her, you can tell that she is incredibly physically fit.
Oh, yeah.
And she ends up with such a...
You can see in Conan, I mean, she is...
She has such little body fat. Yeah. And that...
Kate's
so
mom.
She has a very square-cut jaw.
Yeah.
But I still find her very attractive.
I love her as a screen presence. I love her as an actress. I just, you know.
I found her attractive.
You were fixing to say you'd fuck her.
That's damn right I would.
I'd fuck her. I found her very attractive.
I would.
It's okay.
It's okay. Of course it's okay. I'm not saying that it's not okay. I'm just trying to be amicable.
You're always amicable.
I would do things to her. I'm sorry.
I would make her breakfast.
Now, she's wearing that black and white from Conan that when they dress up as thieves to go mm-hmm. down there and they wear that black and white.
Now, that's some good stuff right there.
Yeah, it is.
No one out there listening has seen it, but I made a horror movie several years ago and I dressed up my main villain chick.
That was your inspiration for that.
Sure.
Underbelly.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Instead of white and black, I did it like a bumblebee. I did black and
yellow
face paint on her, but it was basically to mimic the thieves in Conan. I always loved that.
I just don't want to let this cigar go.
Tuttle is nubbing the hell out of that. Okay. I love it.
I'm John.
Taste more butter, you sons of bitches.
I'm going to try to John Crump this thing.
The butter has gone away, actually. The butter did not last long.
Yeah. The nub gets more down to just a rich tobacco flavor, and that's what I really
like.
And
that was also on the notes, so yeah. Bravo to them. Don't feel bad, the butter went very quick. Now I'm getting just notes of Canadian bacon and, I don't know, like a rich Scandinavian chocolates, maybe?
Delicious hash browns, you say.
I don't know. It's kind of like Norwegian tulip honey.
That's going to be in the next cigar pairing game. But he's gonna handcuff her, and he's got a Princess Leia slave. She looks very much like Princess Leia.
Slave Leia with the neck collar.
Going into Jabba's palace, and he's going to pass her off as a prisoner to get access into Frogtown. Going to sell her into frog slavery. So as they enter Frogtown, and this is another thing, kind of like the women humming Johnny Come Walking Home, like a lot of very cool artistic touches. When they enter Frogtown, man, there's like five or six establishing shots of that dilapidated industrial complex that is Frogtown that could be in like a much better movie. Like the way they frame these.
That's why I'm saying is that I'm surprised that it was straight to video, because there was some production value to this thing.
But that's just a great location and some great cinematography.
Yeah.
That's not money. That's framing the camera right to make this shit look great.
They found a great location.
They really did.
I mean, it worked. And that's why I said I was just really surprised. A lot of the, you know, going back to the opening, the just certain shots, you're like, wait, this is... It's just sort of such a low-budget film, but you're like, wow, this is honestly really good.
This kind of barren industrial complex that they're doing this in, like, money can't buy you that location.
Yeah, yeah.
And all you gotta do is just a director with half a mind to just frame it right.
Yeah.
These wide shots. It's just beautiful. But then they enter the Frogtown Saloon. Roddy and his sex slave, Spangle. And whatever atmosphere they had generated in these Sergio Leone just epic widescreen shots goes out the window. I mean, this thing was filmed in a high school stage somewhere. It is very much Tatooine on a no budget.
Yeah, because I mean, they go through all the establishing character shots of the
frog
patrons
lady dancing on top of the table. It's like a frog stripper, basically, but she's very heavily clothed. She's dancing on a tabletop. A bunch of
they couldn't afford the money for the full frog suit.
A bunch of frog dudes are sitting around drinking industrial waste at the bar. They see Roddy Roddy Piper, and the bartender has a great line like, "Here goes the neighborhood."
I'm surprised they didn't do the "We don't serve your kind."
They might as well have. It was very and he becomes full Han Solo in the scene.
Yeah.
So he orders up a drink, takes a drink of this industrial waste. His eyes literally go cross-eyed, like comical Roddy Roddy Piper stuff. What the? He's just so crazy.
Sell it, Roddy. Sell it.
He sells it. And just as his eyes go cross-eyed, he spits out his drink. He hears the voice of Rory Calhoun.
I know.
Yes.
Farmer Vincent from Motel Hell, exactly. Among a million other things.
I recognize him from Motel Hell.
He has been...
He literally, his IMDb, I didn't look at it, has to be one of the longest on IMDb.
Yeah.
This guy worked from like the 30s, 40s, like a kid actor.
Born in 22.
I think he literally worked in every decade from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s.
He did, God, I mean, he was one of the mainstays.
Big Western guy, he was in a lot of Westerns.
The 50s, the 60s, and all those Westerns.
I've actually I've had a couple talks about him with your dad about Westerns.
His voice is so distinctive.
His face is so
distinctive. His face,
One of the things I loved him from, I always get these movies confused, but it's the big bunny movie, Night of the Lepus.
Hmm.
He's in that with DeForest Kelly, Doc from Star Trek. Was it Night of Lepus?
I think so.
Or was
yes.
it the other one?
Is that the one with the mutant bunnies? That
yes.
are like
yes.
okay.
He's a rancher. All right, he's going to hate me for. He'll never listen to this. Mincy. He was watching that movie one night, and he's like, "Dude, have you ever seen this giant killer bunny movie?" I'm like, "I've seen a couple of them. Which one are you watching?" He's like, "It came out in the 70s. It's got a DeForest Kelly from Star Trek in it, and Roy Calhoun." Night of the Lepus?
Oh, is that the French indie?
Night of the Lepus, huh?
Go on.
I saw one called Night of the Lepus. next show, somebody bring up Night of the Lepus.
He's going to hate us.
But okay. I got your Lepus right here. But anyway, we hear Rory Calhoun, who to him is kind of like his
mentor.
What's Sam Elliott in Roadhouse?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name in that?
Wade Garrett.
Wade Garrett from Roadhouse. These guys have been on some adventures together.
Hey, mijo.
They always kind of come back together. But he's in town. He's a uranium miner. And he's helping these frog people mine uranium. He gets like 20% of whatever uranium they find. But man, you could tell he's at his... I didn't look when he died, but he was towards the end here. I mean, he was not looking healthy.
He
looked like skin and bones.
He passed away in the 90s. I think he passed away like in 99.
Oh, wow. He went another 10 years after this?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't see him as being unhealthy. His other movie, I just thought he was being old.
One of his other last movies that he did that was kind of... that got him back on the main screen, he was in Pure Country with George Strait.
Who's he in that?
You know that white top... that white thing on the top of... chicken shit? Well, it's still chicken shit.
Yeah.
He played the love interest's father.
Yes.
Man, I've seen that movie so many times because I worked at the theater with this guy. A projectionist I worked with.
Yeah.
He would sit up in that office in the projectionist and watch that on VHS over and over. Dusty, was that George Strait's name?
Dusty? Yes, Dusty. He hooks up with that girl.
Wait. I just saw number five.
Never mentioned
into the table. Never to mention that I've seen Pure Country.
Yeah, too late now.
And that I know his name was Dusty.
But yeah.
Oh, George Strait was such an actor.
And it was, once again, like you hear him in that, you hear him in Pure Country. I mean, just anytime you hear him.
Yeah.
It's like Smith. That voice. You hear that voice and you immediately go, I know that guy.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith?
No. William Smith.
Oh, William Smith. The rat. Okay, Devlin. Yeah, okay.
You hear that voice.
You hear that voice. Rory Calhoun's voice puts me in a happy place.
Yes.
Yeah. He's just such... even in Motel Hell, he's such a likable...
likable dude.
Yeah. And he rocks that movie. And it sucks that out of 3,000 screen credits, I go to Motel Hell. But from what I hear, he was kind of proud of it. Like, he rocked that movie.
Yeah.
Well, before... I mean...
he's Farmer Vincent. He was known to a whole generation of fans that never knew him before.
Yeah, I was about to say,
Like I said, you really look at him, I mean...
unless you really like Night of the
Early, all of his early work, man. The Texan.
Sorry, I don't like
it French independent movies. It was all these westerns. I mean, of course, you know, you kind of get pigeonholed. Just, you know, that John Wayne.
Yeah.
You know, you don't necessarily... you want to be an actor, but, man, that's where they put you. His voice, the just this...
the smile. The southern welcoming smile. And that's what the guys that did Motel Hell... which we might do on this show sometime, because I love that movie so much. That playing off his likability and that down home, just playing that to
he's
a guy.
He's an evil, sinister dude.
Whoever cast him in Motel Hell.
Yeah. They earned their salary.
But he plays this old companion of Rowdy Roddy Piper's named Looney Tunes. And Looney's helping the Greeners mine for uranium. And he agrees to set... because Roddy's trying to unload this sex slave, he agrees to set him up with this frog named Leroy. This is almost as objectionable as the rape stuff. Leroy, we would learn as they meet, is
a puta, pimp. Puta solo.
A pimp frog, but for some reason he wears a Shriner hat.
Shriner hat, that's
hey,
what cracked me
there's nothing wrong
up.
With a good fez.
First of all, just the anatomy of a frog head, it's wide and oval, like... a Shriner hat is the worst suited hat to put on.
But
this guy rocks it. He makes it work. Leroy makes the Shriner.
Leroy rocks it.
They sit at a table in the back of the Tatooine Club with the pimp frog named Leroy. Really, but that's your first glimpse at a really good frog suit. The guys at the bar and the girl were kind of eh. But this guy...
yeah, static. This is where you can finally see the animatronics really kicking in.
You can see the animatronics of the mouth moving. His hands.
Yeah.
Look just as good as like the Predator's hands when they show the Predator.
And honestly...
really good makeup work.
What really drew me about the frog costumes, the eyes.
Yeah.
They really moved well.
They did. And they really... you sell it with the eyes. They say that with every effect. If you can sell it with the eyes... everything else is right.
They really copied, quote unquote, the amphibian head.
And see, that's
those eyes, they moved in such a way, like, you were like, I sat there and said, you know what? I believe this.
See, they paid attention to, like, the little details, like the moisture on the skin.
Yes.
From an amphibian.
That glaze to it. Yeah. And when he moved his fingers, it didn't, like, like a plastic glove.
Yeah, it wasn't like plastic extensions.
It wasn't like a plastic rubber glove. Like, it actually looked like
The stripper was a little bit weird with her sucker.
Which I think is why they covered her up so much. For strippers, she wore Gone with the Wind, like a Southern Belle. Like, she was totally covered. Not covered enough for Roddy. He'd later on want to cover up a little bit more, but that's another hilarious thing we'll get to.
I think we would all make that same face if encountering
it. It's a really good frog suit. And Leroy offers some food to Roddy Piper and the rest of the crew.
Which basically just looked like cottage cheese with green food dye.
Pretty much.
Well, he said it was ground up tortoise and brown lizard, which would what frogs eat, I guess. And he gives him a radioactive Coors. Roddy's so excited, like, holy shit, this is real beer.
Real beer.
Chugs it. It's like, yes, we found it in the back of the uranium mine. It's only somewhat heavily radiated. And, you know. Gulp. And Roddy sells that too. Just
now he is sterile.
Not Roddy.
He's too virile for
one
irradiated can of warm cores.
Kid style. God knows I've had my share of irradiated cores.
We dug up that rock.
That's what's sad. Who knows what was in that?
How long has this been here?
That was old Milwaukee, though, not Coors.
Those cans are specially designed.
Especially designed to withstand that. The people in Milwaukee insist on it. So he reveals, Leroy, kind of gives us some glimpse into the frogs' mindset. They're pissed at humans in general. Because you guys started this war, this nuclear war, and we're a mutated byproduct of your war. And then man, of course, being man, herds them into these territories and treats them like shit, like it's their fault, like cattle. And it makes sense. It's a very... Well, it goes with a lot of wars. Every war has byproducts that don't deserve their lot in life. Of course you're going to hate. These frogs hate man because man created you, and as a result, they treat you like shit. They have a very legitimate gripe, these frogs.
I can't believe I'm saying this.
These frogs have a very legitimate gripe.
TNCC is pro-mutated frogs.
When our frog overlords eventually come in and develop a strong military base and start... We are... The TNC, Tuesday Night Star Club, is pro-advanced amphibians.
We welcome our mutant overlords.
Come in, have a cigar with us.
Unless I'm a fertile man, and then I am for the... female government.
I want to be like those newscasters on V. Remember V? They always got like the newscaster to be their like voice. Like,
the voice.
They're here for us. Everything's fine. Why is one eating your arm?
It's perfectly fine.
Shift the camera a little bit away from my...
camera two, tighten up on Johnny.
It does make quite a bit of sense where the frogs are coming from.
Sure.
For a movie like this, it made sense.
Yes. Unfortunately, yes.
So just then, the bull, who's the frog who took all the fertile pilgrim girls to Toady, Commander Toady, the leader.
Commander Toady.
Enters the bar, and he takes Spangle by his whip.
Hang on one second. Let's restart that. When you're looking at your script, just be conscious of the mic because sometimes you're like down around here, so you're losing you just a little bit. That's the only time I'm losing you though, because the rest of it sounds great.
Okay,
let's start it.
So just then, after Leroy kind of lays out where all the amphibians are coming from, Bull, who's Commander Toady's kind of right hand man,
Indiana Jones it.
He comes in and he's the one who took all the fertile girls and sold them to Commander Toady.
Commander Toady.
He whips with his bullfrog whip, I guess.
See, I was thinking that it would be cool if that was like his tongue or something. It's like, shka.
We never really saw a lot of
tongue action.
Well, a lot of frog behavior. They jump every once in a while, but it's real weak. Like, they'll show him jump and then they'll cut to...
Yeah, it's kind of like the $6 million man cut.
There is no budget for actual skill, like mutant skills with these frogs. But he comes in and he whips Spangle with his bull whip. Asks, this is great, I love this line from Roddy Roddy Piper. Bull asks him, where are you from, stranger?
Nowhere nice.
I don't know why. That's a great line. Right?
No, it's perfect. I mean, it worked so... Well, this movie's got a couple really good lines. Like,
I mean, what else was he going to say? Where are you from? Go fuck yourself.
Nowadays, that would be the easy...
That would be the easy
that'd
one.
Be the easy one. But Roddy's like, no, we're nice. And then he immediately just knocks Piper the fuck out. Just... And steals Sprangle. Later on, Arabella...
He shuts Pimp down.
And he shuts Pimp down. He's like, you know what? This bar is closed. Everyone,
you're trying to make a private deal.
Go back into the uranium mines. Get back to work. This bar is closed till I say otherwise.
Damn you.
He really fucked up Leroy's little thing he had going here.
Come on.
Later on, Arabella, which we'd learn is the amphibian table dancer, that...
Who's working in cahoots with Spangle.
Turns out she is their inside connection. Yeah. They have an inside source. She happens to be their contact. She wakes up Hell and tries to immediately jump his bones. She's horny and she...
Well, she's heard about him.
Even she's heard of his legendary sexual conquests, Kate style.
He's a little hesitant. Oh, boy. He's trying to...
I don't know. Back in my
she's 20s. Hideous. I mean, she looks like a really sickly frog in a really bad.
I don't know. Back in my 20s and my drunk days,
there's not enough Mad Dog. Great Mad Dog. There's not enough Kiwi Lime Mad Dog in the world
We'll get on that Boone Strawberry and
just go ahead and surgically remove my left arm now.
I hear frog legs taste like chicken.
Oh, my dignity.
Don't you ever bring up that dignity again. You hear me? We no more talk about dignity in this Abraham Lincoln's forehead in Mount Rushmore.
Wait, that's six on the list of what we can't
speak of. What we can't speak of is our own dignity.
I just carved a shitload of hieroglyphics on the side of this table.
It's a Magna Carta.
He tells her, okay, you want to do it this bad. He needs your help. Can you put a bag on your head? Which she does. She gets a burlap sack. Or is it a paper bag?
No, it's like a sack. Yeah.
It's like a sack. Yeah. And she puts it on her head. And he's like, oh, shit. She actually is up for this. You know, most girls find that somewhat objectionable, I hear. I went to Sam Houston. And it was different time, different place.
Do you mind if I put a bag on my head?
I believe that's what they call double baggers, right? Or a triple bagger. You wear two bags in case one breaks, and I'm going to put one on my head just... That's an insurance policy. But she puts it on her head, and then he's like creeping backwards out of the room like, all right, baby, get ready. And she's got these bag on her head. But before he can sneak away, his codpiece starts beeping, which means Spangle is being taken far away.
Yeah.
Outside.
He's got to get close to her.
He's got to find her, or else his cock and balls is going to explode. So she's on the move.
Not in a good way.
And he needs to rescue her, or bye-bye, wee-wee, which was the name of a book of short poetry, I believe, Mincy wrote in his North Texas days. Bye-bye, wee-wee, and other lamentations by John Christopher Mincy. It's kind of like Goodnight Moon, bye-bye, wee-wee. So he finds her. Roddy finds her. And then this is where, did you guys get a very strong Jack Burton presence?
I've gotten a lot of Jack Burton.
Well, there's a lot of similarities moving forward from this point on, but this was a very Jack Burton Big Trouble in Little China move. He finds her and he's leaning over this railing and it breaks and he just falls. He completely blows it. And he tumbles down and gets captured by the frog forces immediately. Totally blows his hero moment. Well, meanwhile, Spangle finds herself. She's been captured and she's in this bed surrounded by the fertile village pilgrim chicks that have been
that they were supposed to
that they're there to rescue
to the very women that they're to rescue, and they're doing this kind of tantric meditation thing with her where they're like
warming your body,
they're kind of moving over and they're trying to get her body prepared.
You need to have passion to survive what's next. They're doing the dance of
this kind of yoga very relaxation thing over her body, awakening her body and her senses for whatever their captors have in store for her that night. They tell her body needs to feel alive to face the dance of the three snakes, which is another adults-only podcast that the three of us do immediately following the TNCC
keyword on that, adults only. But go to iTunes, look up Dance of the Three Snakes, and enjoy the show. Or as Rock would say, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Dance of the Three Snakes. That's actually a 10-minute podcast. So if you're looking for something shorter, that might be up your alley. But again, I cannot stress enough, adults only. Bull has tied up Roddy Piper. This is a great scene nearby, where he's decided they want to investigate the man's technology more.
Yeah,
so he fires up this chainsaw and he's going to saw off Roddy's codpiece to get a closer look at it. And Roddy's begging and pleading, you know, if it goes, I go. Please, God, no. And then it runs out of gas. So the chainsaw runs out of gas, not Roddy's Johnson. That never runs out of gas. Meanwhile, the Pilgrim Girls have brushed up against Spangle's earring, which set off the detonator on the electricity deal.
At first he's pleading,
don't do it.
Don't do it. You don't understand.
But then the plastique is activated. He's like, hurry, cut it off. And it's Rowdy at his best, like just thrashing, like,
come on, what are you doing?
Cut the fucking thing off.
Before, he doesn't want the chainsaw near his Johnson.
Now he needs it. So Bull cuts it off. And once it's off, Bull starts laughing. Oh, because he's like, it's wired to blow my ass. And he takes it off, and
there's no way that you're a fertile man. There's no way that they're going to rig you to blow.
And Bull picks it up and puts it up to his face, and he's like, wired to blow my ass.
And of course, the first instinct of any mutant is to pick up a human codpiece and hold it right in his face.
And Roddy's like, I'll be damned, she lied to me. And this then, boom, it blows up right in Bull's face, which is funny.
It is hilarious.
So it blows Bull, but he's out, but not for the count. Spangle,
like Sub-Zero, he's out, or not Sub-Zero, but like Dynamo, he's out, Dynamo. But he's not down.
Dynamo's never out for the count. So Spangle at this point starts dancing for Commander Toddy, the leader, seemingly turning him on with the most insane dance routine. Like, it's a mixture of like every dance style known to man, but. Again, I don't find any of it erotic.
Well, some of the little back trivia on this. I did look it up.
Cody, I could just see Cody dance style in Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Well, no.
You're on a watch list now, pal.
There was apparently
she was supposed to be naked. I have heard the story.
And that day when she walked in and literally they gave her the what for the scene, she said no. So she did not take off any of her clothes.
Which, if she agreed to do it naked when she took the job and said no the day of shooting, is bullshit.
That's bad on her, yeah.
Who knows the politics involved when Hell Comes to Frogtown?
See, that's what I said. I don't know. I mean, it's not like they,
But if she agreed to do it and then she was like, you know what? Because a lot of times actresses will agree to it. Yeah. But then they know, I filmed enough days, they can't recast me.
Yeah.
So I kind of hold all the cards here.
Yeah, that's BS.
But I don't know if that's the case.
Yeah.
I think...
It was not Corman's way to put girls in a position where, like, guess what? You got to be naked today. Corman's a class act. I don't see that being the case.
I think this was one of those instances where they said, we want you to do it naked, and she says, no, I didn't sign up for that.
She looks at the scripts like, oh, yeah, I'm in Hell Comes to Frogtown. And I'm going to be dancing naked in front of a guy in a fucking frog suit. I may want to reproduce and have a family someday, and this may come back to haunt me.
This is
Cade style.
But like I said, if the guy was on the up and up, you know, maybe it was just one of those things the day of shot. Hey, have you thought about doing this naked?
Well, it makes sense naked because apparently none of these other chicks who are pretty, some of them pretty cute.
Yeah.
It takes a lot to get the three snakes to come up and be aroused. And what she was doing wouldn't get my trouser snake aroused, let alone this guy.
But obviously, we are not toad men, so.
No, we're not.
I was just kind of cracking up because dance wise, it was like a mixture of all this. And see, that's why, you know, it was like modern
dance, and then she'd go into like a pirouette, and then she'd like. It was Jamie Lee Curtis's True Lies dance, but just like so much worse.
Yeah. I actually kind of like Jamie Lee Curtis's.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, she actually made it work to awkward to.
Well,
this went from
awkward to more awkward to bizarre to confusing.
Yeah.
To like penis deflating.
But the weird thing is that when you watch her, you can tell that she's a dancer.
I had no idea where this came from, this routine.
I think she just...
off the top of her head, yeah. just dance, baby. Well, just I mean, dance bad.
Like I said, she's a dancer. She's got the chops.
Eventually, against all logic and some laws of physics, she actually arouses the three snakes in this guy's crotch, the Captain Toadie's crotch, these three snakes, the three penises.
Well, which we found out, the dance of the three snakes is because Captain Toadie has three
dicks,
amphibian penises.
Do frogs have three dicks?
I have no idea, but apparently this guy
does. I'm not familiar with
frogs. None of you guys looked that up? If frogs have three penises.
I dissected them, but I didn't pay attention to that part.
I think I would have noticed.
I wasn't looking.
I dissected quite a few frogs in high school. I think I would have noticed, like, oh, shit, they have three wieners.
I'm fairly certain they don't.
Okay.
But he was the king mutant, so apparently...
Well,
if two was good, three must be better.
She gets him aroused somehow. And as soon as they're aroused, she kicks them. One, two, three. She kicks them right in the trouser snakes.
That's really... I mean, you get kicked once, but then take the time to like, oh, she hit the other one. Oh, the third one.
Oh, it's brutal. And then right as his henchmen are like, all right, it's go time. And they bring up their guns. Roddy comes in. Eat lead, froggies. Crew shotguns and just.
I'm sorry, I love that. Eat lead, froggies!
Nobody has made an Eat Lead, Froggies t-shirt for me to buy, I don't know.
I don't know. I immediately, right when he kicked down that door,
funny thing
of course,
is I know you would
all I
could
think
that.
Of was, they live, I am here to kick ass.
It was a precursor to that, but it was just Eat Lead, Froggies. It was great. Meanwhile, while this is going on, old man Looney Tunes, Roy Calhoun, has snuck away. And has fired a flare into the sky for Sentinella to know where they're located so she can come in with the pink armored wagon and start kicking ass and pick them up.
He fires the flare through.
Through. That's the funny thing is that it was through him, but the angle on the cut was like straight up.
It didn't make much sense. Imagine that at this point. It didn't make much sense.
Well, you can't really hold Hell to Frogtown to a...
No.
Yes, you can. You can. As soon as you start saying, you know what, I'm just going to let it slide, then no.
So before they
you lose the art.
Before they leave, they have a moment where they're loading their guns, Rowdy and Spangle. And she asks if the heart necklace he wears is his wife's, because he wears a silver necklace with a little heart on it. He says, no, it's his daughter's. It's all he could find of her after the war was the necklace. And again, another little scene where he isn't Rowdy Roddy Piper. Yeah. He's crafty and performing. She's like, well, you know, the war was a long time ago. And he says, not for me.
Not for me.
And it's a genuine moment that he sells.
It does.
They happen frequently in this movie. You look for them.
And I really wish they would have. And I thought that was like one of those scenes in which, like, you know, they could have pointed out the necklace sooner.
Yeah.
Like...
I noticed.
You know, like
it.
When he was tied give to the chair, we're going to take all your personal effects. You know, you touch the fucking necklace, I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, give him a little bit of a story before, you know, and three quarters of the way through.
Well, it obviously doesn't mean much to him because he gives it to Sentinella later, and she's...
Well, that was his way of saying, you know what, I'm beyond my past.
I think so, and I think it was like, thanks for, you know...
But I mean, alone, I think that was... Because, I mean, like I said, that was... Like, you just mentioned...
It, and maybe it was like, scenes, can we pick up where we left off that night where you stripped down?
He sold that. He gave that scene a good... You actually felt like, hey, I like this character.
Yeah, I mean, it was
a perfect example of when you slow him down and allow him to relax and give him a little direction and be like, you know what? Breathe. Act a little bit tired because you've been through a lot and just be you.
And see, I think...
Or not be you. Be this guy in this moment.
See, that's the thing that I think that he's a little undervalued is that I think with direction, he actually could grasp the subtleties of characters. And it's not because...
he clearly can.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I think that directors just aren't used to working with... It's almost like on the same stage as theater actors. You know, in theater actors, you have to sell to the room. Before the ages of microphones where they started miking the actors, and you had to sell to the backseat of the house.
You put it best. Wrestlers are very much like classically trained theater actors coming out of doing plays. You can't emote with a tear because the guy in the back's not going to see your tear. You can't whisper because the guy in the back's not going to hear that whisper. when you transfer that to film, where you're used to having to go so big all the time, and be like, you know what? Guess what?
Yeah.
You can whisper. You can just twitch your eye a little bit to convey something, and we're going to get it.
Yeah.
Try it. And you see him do it. It's wonderful. I did that, you know. I'm going to have to put the damn thing on YouTube because we talk about it so much. But with Underbelly, with Fritz, which that reminds me, let's get some Fritz going. But with Fritz, he's used to performing he's a musician. He's
right.
A rock musician.
Right.
He's used to performing for crowds. And when I was trying to get him to act in Underbelly, I'm like, you've got to take it down a notch. And that was difficult, naturally. And eventually got to, like, you had to be very specific in your direction.
Right.
Like, you know what? I want you to pretend like you have a migraine headache. Like, you're literally right here. Like, it hurts you to talk.
Yeah.
And once he started doing that and taking it down a notch, he went away from the headache thing and just realized, I'm like, come around here and look at the screen. Look at where I'm filming you. You go big, it's completely wrong. It reads unnatural.
Yeah.
The smallest little things. That's what's great about film.
See, that's what I think Elizabeth Taylor, I think it was, that she said that less is more when it came to acting, because your face is basically 50 feet tall,
right.
You know, it's just, you know, dominating a scene. So you don't have to go over the top with your emotions. And to me, that's actually what made Arnold and Maggie so special. Is that for a long time through the action genres, you know, he's a little bit more over the top with his facial expressions, but on Maggie, he dialed that down so much that I was like, oh my God, this guy's got acting chops. And I think that's where if Roddy would have been teamed with, and you saw it with They Live when John Carpenter came in, that's why I asked earlier in the podcast, was it inexperience or, you know, the strength of director? You know, it's just not... Roddy is an actor. It's just he's not used to this type of acting. And if you get that director who can bring that type of acting out, I think that's where you really get those subtle
moments. And I give these directors a lot of credit, because they would have had to. He had no experience. They had to bring that out of him. And you know what? But you know, we said that with Arnold and Maggie, but Arnold showed that very early on. I mean, there's moments, even, you know, in the 80s films where he went subtle. Predator has a million subtle moments.
See, I never saw that. I'm sorry.
Predator,
I
mean,
that.
even some of the really, you know, like Commando. He had, you know, when he was sitting there, and you would see him like, you could see that face, like he's got the, I have to save my daughter.
Just conveying facially wise? What?
Right. Conan, when he's sitting there like, you know, like overcoming the fact that, you know, I'm not a killing machine. I was raised in fighting pits. I did all these things. And, you know, you see him, you know, there's that scene when he's on the beach on the sand, and he's sitting there. He just was practicing with his sword, but he's looking at his hand like,
again,
he's contemplating like,
but again,
what am I?
What's the common factor there? John Milius.
Yeah.
He's got a grade A-plus director walking through the trope. He also did a shitload, years and years of acting lessons before he stepped on the set of Conan. I mean, he always looked at it as
a profession.
Know, he knew he wasn't going to last as with muscles. He had to prove something more. But Roddy's getting it in this. And boy, I really think this was before They Live, because I think when you mix what he learned on this with Carpenter,
I think that kind of makes sense.
Because Carpenter is not a hands-on actor's director. He casts who he wants, and he trusts them to a very... Actors love working with him because he's not a domineering... I'll admit, you know, when I work with actors, I'm very blunt. If they're not saying it the way I want it to be said... But then again, I'm not dealing with Hollywood. I'm not casting Sam Neill in my movie. I'm not casting even Roddy Piper. I'm dealing with local people who say they're actors, but they haven't had a lot of experience, or they have been told all the wrong things.
Yeah.
And sometimes they like... I find sometimes they like to be...
Yeah.
Let me show you how I want it done. Kubrick did that. Kubrick was a big, say it this way.
Yeah, the few times I've actually been in a director's spot for, like, some of the commercial projects we've done,
That's so not me. I'm pretty much, I know how I want it in my head, and I can't communicate that whatsoever. I'll just have you retake it until I see what I want.
Oh, God. He's Kubrick in, like, it's a Wendy's commercial. Take 47.
Look, Jason, what do you want me to convey about this Baconator?
I just,
I'm not getting,
you know, just, you're hungry.
You're hungry.
I'm not getting that you're hungry.
I've eaten 47 Baconators at this point.
But you're an actor, damn it. Act.
Can I just get a Frosty to wash it down after we're done? After we get this take, you can get your fucking Frosty.
So full of bacon.
Well, he sells in that scene. The war is a long time ago, not for me. And he really sells it. And I was reminded of They Live. So many little moments that he sells that.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I think you're right. I think this probably came after. I would love to if someone comes out and says, no, you're wrong, guys.
Well,
prove us wrong.
We've yet to have those naysayers. As we gain viewers, maybe we'll get some naysayers. That'd be nice. But while they're doing this, they see some frogs loading their guns and stuff, and they overhear that a guy named Count Sodom.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Count Sodom.
I heard Count, but Count I didn't know Sodom.
Is supplying their guns, which I believe is one of the many dating profile names that Mincy has used online over the last few years. Count Sodom. But that's kind of just a quick little moment there, but it would come into play later. Sentinella arrives just in time as Hell and Spangle lead the harem of fertile pilgrim chicks out of Commander Toadie's lair, much like Big Trouble in China when they're getting all the Chinese girls.
Yeah.
They're rescuing them all from the underground prison. Very much like that. They're getting them all out, and just remind me a lot of Big Trouble in China. All the while Looney Tunes, Roy Calhoun is covering them with his flare gun.
With his flare gun.
Flare gun.
My favorite part in this is that, you know, you're trying to evade the enemy, so what do? You drive this bright pink Pazzy wagon and then start honking the horn. It's just, I'm right out here in the quad.
But then again, it's Sentinella. She's not there to hide. She's there to lay down.
She's there to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And she's all out of bubblegum.
That is right.
Man, I love Sentinella. I would love to see a spin-off movie just of her.
I want to know how Sentinella... I want to see Sentinella's origin story.
Right? Well, they pack everyone into the pink bus and they squeal the hell out of there. That sounds like a euphemism, doesn't it? As they're celebrating their escape, as they're driving off, Looney Tunes, Roy Calhoun dies a very peaceful... He got hit in the crossfire, and he dies with his head in the lap of
like five beautiful women.
Beautiful women. He's like, you know, he says something like, if heaven is half as good as this, I'm all right. But he's just such a likable actor, man. It was.
He really is.
It was kind of remind me of his death in Motel Hell. And
I've been keeping a horrible secret my whole career.
And you expect him to fess up, you know, you've been using... killing people and chopping them up into your sausage and all that. Is it his last dying words?
I use preservatives.
That had to look like such a shit roll on paper, but man, he made it his own, didn't he?
Yeah.
Hey, Roy, we got this script for you. What do you think about doing this?
How do you feel about spending the next 2 months in overalls? The same pair of overalls. You'll never change. All of a sudden, boom, they're surrounded by explosions from... It's a very Road Warrior on a budget.
It really was a Road Warrior on a budget.
It's a small pickup truck that's been painted camouflage.
It's got that howitzer coming out
the window. It's got a huge cannon coming out, but like everything about it just screams like, what, maybe $1,000 to put this thing together?
Yeah. And you got Commander Toadie, you know, on the top of the vehicle with a shotgun. Onward!
They're chasing him through, and they're firing these cannons at him. Commander Toadie corners the pink van in a ravine where all of a sudden Count Sodom himself in a gas mask is waiting for him with a missile launcher.
RPG, baby. The Soviet style.
Yeah. Rocket launcher. Tells them all to throw down their guns. And it's Captain Devlin from the beginning, the police officer, William Smith. Roddy has a great thing here, but
he's been the one dealing guns to the frogs because he hates that women are running the world.
Those damn women.
And they're trading the uranium they dig to him for guns so he can build one more nuclear bomb and start all over. He'd rather have a clean slate and try again than these women running the earth. He's like the ultimate like misogynist. Like he yeah. just hates women in charge. There's too many women. They have us by the short hairs, and I'm going to change all that. Such a weird motive for a supervillain, but so that's his ultimate goal is to build a nuclear bomb and start it all over again. Well, it's suddenly revealed that I never saw this before. Did you? That Roddy Piper has a samurai sword on his back.
I
never noticed it.
I know nowhere. Like it just.
I've been watching this guy for an hour at this point, and all of a sudden they go to his back. They kind of reveal in the back he's got this huge samurai sword. I never saw that before.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever had that before. I think they just like final act. We need something. Nobody's ever going to notice. Just give him a huge Kill Bill.
Yeah, it's a nice little katana sword
in the back. And with a little help from one of the fertile pilgrim girls, she pulls it out and he throws it.
Bullseye
right through Count Sodom's chest, which Piper has a great line. You long-winded son of a bitch. Because he did. He talked. He could have killed them all in a heartbeat, but he just kept talking and talking.
Well, he was a classic villain. He was monologuing.
He was a long-winded son of a bitch.
Exactly. You got a monologue.
Well,
baby.
He falls off the cliff when he says in a sword, but Roddy goes after him to finish it off, and it turns out he lives. He plays possum, and he's going to kill Roddy, and Roddy at the last moment, you know, pure Western, senses that he's alive, spins around, and shoots him right in the head.
Was I the only one when they were in that valley, and he got Toady that was there for a little bit, and all of a sudden I'm thinking back to Star Trek and Kirk and the Lizard Man?
Well, actually, no. That was, I think, the actual area that they filmed.
No
that
shit. Thing.
Yes, it was.
All right.
Was it really? Where was this film? Do you know?
It was filmed, obviously, in California.
Okay.
But that... No, the...
Yeah, the rocks. The rocks looked...
The rocks, yes. It was, it was exactly the same area that they filmed.
I just kept waiting for the... Da-dum, da-dum,
this was an episode?
Well, I kept waiting for somebody to do a Shatner roll, come up with the classic clenched fist bump. Like...
Judo chop!
But yes, no, it was within that same area.
Yeah,
the rock formations, everything.
Yeah, it really kind of exuded that vibe.
It was probably on the other side of the rock that they filmed that scene on. So, okay, you're going to fight a giant lizard man, and wait a second. This is the exact same spot. No.
Trust me, we're on the other side of the
rock.
That
was the other side. This is this side, so we're good. It's not going to be the same. But I'm fighting a giant lizard. Okay, look, just deal with it, all right?
I don't think Roddy was asking those questions.
No.
So he finds Devlin playing possum, blows him away. Just as supposedly Commander Toady has arrived and decimated with an explosion the pink bus full of girls. So Roddy Piper grabs the missile launcher, runs down there and confronts Commander Toady. Which is a really funny scene. He goes to finish this off, me and you. He goes to fire the missile launcher and doesn't work.
Click,
click, click, click, click the trigger, nothing. Then he pulls out his gun and it like fires twice and then it jams. Nothing. So Toady like laughs at him and runs. Mano e Toto, and he runs off. So it's now a foot chase up the mountains where they fight, or more accurately, wrestle. Lots of wrestling moves here. Right in Roddy's wheelhouse. At one point, Roddy pokes Toady.
Oh, that was the best.
Finger pokes him in the eyes.
Which is so funny because, like, when I see wrestling actors, I get a little bit, I guess a little jaded or whatever, to where I'm like, oh, they're a wrestling actor, so you have to incorporate wrestling moves. No, you don't. But people are like, well, I'm working with a wrestler, I should incorporate a suplex.
I'm okay with it.
But when he incorporated the dirty move, the poke in the eyes, oh, I lost it. Yes.
And Commander Toady was just like, oh, totally sells it.
He Ric Flaired it.
He totally Ric Flaired it. And I just laughed like crazy. But eventually he pushes him off, Commander Toady, off a cliff. He's holding on to him and he gets a hold of his samurai sword, cuts off his hand. But then did you guys notice when the commander falls off the cliff, he had both hands still?
I did.
It's kind of a big blooper there.
Yeah. It's how it comes to Frogtown. But like Cody says, when you stop giving a shit about the details, it all goes to hell.
It all goes to Frogtown.
It all goes to Frogtown.
Well, surprise. So Roddy makes his way back down to the bus. The ladies are still alive, and he's the hero. Spangle tells him that once he's fulfilled his government, what do they call it, the partial government or the...
Provincial government.
Duties, maybe they can go off and have a vacation together.
Oh, he's like,
his
like
duties,
that.
He says flabbergasted. My duties? She looks back to the all to the horny, fertile pilgrim chicks in the back, and she's like, you know, these bitches are waiting for your spunk, man. You signed the contract. He has that moment where he looks back there, and then he kind of looks, and...
Oh, yeah.
I guess what they say is true. A soldier's work is never done. The end.
Well, but, you know, you got to be happy for a guy, because here it is. He gets the, quote-unquote, he gets the girl.
He gets the girl, and the first thing she wants him to do is bang all these other girls.
So... Good for him.
Hello, exploitation movie.
Man, what a script.
It works.
You know, the funny thing about it is I was just thinking about that. We were joking about Rory. All right, here's the Motel Hell script. What about the Hell from Frogtown script?
Again, I really think he was just so old at this point. And... I don't think he was looking for a lot in Looney Tunes.
I just think no. He wasn't looking for career fulfillment. He's just an actor. This is what he gets paid to do. He's a professional actor.
You know what? And I think that is what is missing so much. I think I've had this rant before. Stop me if I have. I think the work. I think you have this crop of actors, you know, our age and below, which. Feel for some reason they have to say no to things to keep the career path that they envision or whatnot.
But that's kind of like our marketing machine, to where if you have a flop or something that doesn't do
well. Yeah, but
I'm
talking about actors that no one is looking at you for box office or whatever. Just
if you're
an indie actor, or whatever, you say yes to everything.
Yeah, really.
Don't say no. We talked about this once again, going back to the Expendables episode, our very first episode, Rutger Hauer.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, when you can do a hobo with a shotgun, which got him a lot of credit here a couple years ago, what have you done to, you know, where'd you pull this out of?
Well, guess what, asshole?
I've done 50 straight direct-to-video horrible action movies over the last 10 years. All those movies are what... got me to where I can do this movie.
But at the same time, I think there's a difference between, and I'm going to sound like an asshole for saying this, there's a difference between a Rutger Hauer actor and a Johnny Depp actor who's like, you know, top in box office charts, getting like $70 million per. If Johnny Depp tanks, that $70 million per drops down to $40 million, then drops down to $10 million, then drops down. Rutger doesn't have that risk involved.
Johnny Depp did a lot of weird small movies.
Yeah.
Gilbert Grape.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that was a bad example.
No, I'm just saying he did a lot of small bad films now.
Yeah, that's why I said I think it's
Mordecai.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tusk. That was a bad example.
He throws out.
It's a horrible example, Tim.
Yeah, sorry.
Once again, okay, the last movie series, which has been for Depp. Obviously, Pirates. That has been his moneymaker in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
He never springboard off that Pirate success.
Yeah.
Most of the shit that he does outside this Pirate movies...
Well, look at it,
does not do well.
Yeah, but look at... He has been the number one lead actor by Tim Burton for his movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Tim Burton thinks up some crazy shit.
Yeah, but look...
And he jumps on it. He does it. But Depp is, and this is what I love about Depp, he's a costume actor. The man will not appear on film very rarely as himself.
Well, I'm trying to think of another.
You know what, he should do more because the films like Nick of Time.
Yeah. Right? No, no.
The stuff he's done where he's just.
Well, I know, but
playing a guy, he does it really well. Interesting.
Is a costume actor. He wants to put on a costume.
What
he
was
wants
that movie
to be
where,
a character that's not he can so that he looks at himself in the mirror and is not recognizable.
See that, and that's a shame because I remember that. What was the movie where he was like a book specialist and he was investigating
the
Ninth Gate. I love that movie, and I thought that he was.
Well, but even then, cool. He had his overcoat, he had his glasses.
Yeah,
he was,
but it was still Depp. I mean, you could see
again,
Depp.
Who's directing him now? Yeah. Polanski.
True.
A fucking brilliant director. Yeah.
See, I'm trying to think of another actor that, you know, is such box office huge. Like, there's only a few
but
actors.
We'll take chances with smaller stuff?
Right. Like if a Will Smith tried to do Maggie and it flopped, does that hurt his? I mean,
Denzel Washington. He's not doing any low budget, risky stuff.
True.
He's the biggest Hollywood name I can think of right now. Denzel Washington can open a movie like nobody else.
Yeah.
But even then, he's going out and taking movies that are.
But if you go to Denzel Washington, like, hey, I've got a $5 million movie, you play a coked up hermaphrodite. No, you go to Don Cheadle with that shit. You don't come to me with it.
Yeah. I love Don Cheadle.
I open up $20 million movies. I don't do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think what happens is a lot of good actors don't. The ones that I can't understand, the ones that frustrate me the most are the actors that occasionally have taken that dip into the independent pool, had huge success, and then gave up on it.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis.
But is it? But
Bruce Willis.
But am I wrong in thinking that, like,
when he was at his peak, Bruce Willis, the diehards, one bang bang, big stuff after another, he decided to work for scale and do Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
He never did that again. Well, he never.
Well, that's because
he would rather take the same money and do a direct-to-video action flick that we don't even know the name of.
But at the same time, it's kind of like.
Netflix is full of them. Right?
Not to the same scale as Travolta, but Bruce Willis's stock had gone down to where he wasn't getting the demand as the big box office budget.
Well, if he had done more indie stuff.
But then when he came out with Pulp Fiction, he went right back to that top line tier.
And then continued doing shitty movies, his stock lowered again, and he never found another indie thing to solidify himself.
I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong with this, and I'm just kind of grasping. But it just seems to me that, like, there's a mentality that if you're a big box office star and you're in a project that doesn't make big box office money on the opening weekend, then there's part of the American psyche that's like, oh, that actor's lost it. And I think that's what everybody's afraid of, is that they don't want that critique coming back that actor's lost it.
I think. But they're also.
Hey, it's easy for us to sit here and say how these guys should run their careers.
Yeah, true.
You know, we're sitting here in Abraham Lincoln's forehead calling all the shots. But once you have enough money, which that's a whole nother thing. When do you have enough money?
Yeah, really.
If you got kids, you got ex-wives.
You have that $30 million house you're paying for.
You got, you know, your kid.
That $50,000 a semester school you're paying for.
All that. When do you have enough money? But assuming you did, at what point do you just stop and only do the interesting things?
Yeah.
Bill Murray's a good. I know he gets so much praise that's probably a little over the top. Like,
yeah.
But the guy at one point stopped and said, you know what? I'm only going to do shit that interests me.
Yeah.
It could be a flop. It could not make any money. But for whatever reason, that interests me and I'm going to give everything I got to it.
Yeah.
And I give him.
And that's where Arnold's at now. He doesn't need money.
No.
I will only do this if it's a director I want to work with, if it's something I've never done.
See, I think that's the difference between a merc and an artist.
A what and an artist?
A mercenary and an artist. A hired gun. A hired name.
It pains me to say it because at one point there was no bigger Bruce Willis fan than me. The guy is an acting mercenary.
Yeah.
He will show up for the right price and he will be Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Don't you dare expect something outside of Bruce Willis.
Or try to
you
get
hired
him to go
Bruce Willis.
You hired Bruce Willis. I'm going to Bruce Willis this thing. And God forbid you would, from what I hear, try to go against that philosophy, you're in trouble. He'll eat you alive and spit you out. And now what is Netflix full of? New releases. Three or four Bruce Willis movies I've never heard of, starring shit actors, TV actors. I'm not going to watch that. And I love the guy. No. On the flip side of that coin, though, we're exploring that thread. You take a guy like Alec Baldwin, who does a lot of work, but I was listening to an interview he did with Stern last week. He literally attacks every script with an open mind towards character, but he still realizes he was hired to a certain extent because he's Alec Baldwin. But what can he do to serve the story, serve the director? And at no point is he coming in there like, I'm here to serve Alec Baldwin.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference.
And you know, I think the thing that really got him, which I love,
Baldwin.
I can't say, I love it to death. But Glengarry Glen Ross, when he came in with the little speech, coffee is for closers. And ever since then, everything that he has played in any movie has been kind of a caricature off that character.
Oh, dude, Malice. He has that weird trajectory where he was a Hollywood leading sex symbol man.
Yeah.
For like a small window, and then all of a sudden he got chunky and old and gray haired. Like he did The Getaway with Basinger, and he was like this action star. He did, you know.
Well, he thought
Hunt for Red October.
He thought he would go the route of, you know, Brando. And simply put, you know what?
Haven't we all gone the route of Brando?
You can't. Only one person can be Brando.
Every time I look at this podcast, I'm like, oh, I'm too much Brando.
Yeah. Because even, you know.
Another round of mozzarella sticks for me and my compatriots here.
Well, like the
You got to be good Brando before you go bad Brando.
Correct.
You can't go full Brando before you're.
And so many guys, they complain about him. Whatever, besides, you know, Baldwin, Val Kilmer,
A nightmare apparently on set.
Correct,
but at the root of all those stories was always that he was, if anything, so entrenched in trying to create a character. I can't fault an actor for being that. Gee, I hired you to become this person. If my headache is trying to deal with you on set because you're so into giving a unique performance, guess what? 2 months later, the movie's done. All's forgiven. I can deal with dickheads on set if it's coming from
an artistic expression.
But that, I think that is so much the rarity.
Yeah.
I think you have the Rory Calhouns, like we're talking about here. They just show up, give it their all. They're a working actor. It's like young Paul going to a plumbing site. He's going to give it his all. He's going to approach it with everything he knows and his education and do it and hope everybody's happy. And that's Rory Calhoun.
To me, I classify those as working actors. I mean,
and they work.
It's kind of like, I kind of feel bad. Work. I kind of feel bad for saying that because it's almost like saying a possession receiver.
In the very beginning of Frogtown, back in the opening sequence, there was a news report. They showed it.
Oh, her.
Lee Garrington. If you didn't recognize her, I immediately recognized her.
Forgot to mention her.
One of my favorite movies, Cobra, Sylvester Stallone. Mm-hmm. She plays the serial killer's psycho girlfriend. Brian Thompson.
Brian. Or no, Brian. That was Brian.
It was Brian Thompson.
Brian.
He was also one of the original punks in Terminator.
Yes, he was.
Actually, I think, was he the one that got his
heart? Yes. He got his heart pulled out.
Yeah.
Man, acting is always fascinating me. I'm fascinated by actors. I'm fascinated by good ones. The one thing I have learned is IMDb doesn't lie. If you're late 30s, pushing 40, and you have 10 or 15 IMDb credits, you're not a working actor.
Right.
You either have horrible representation, you're too lazy to get representation, or you have another means of, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
These guys that work it. I watched the new Tarantino. Did you guys watch the new Tarantino trailer today?
No.
Oh, the Hateful Eight?
Hateful Eight. They put it out today.
I have not seen it.
I'm watching this thing, and it is filled with working actors.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, who looks amazing.
I hope so.
Walter Scoggins from Justified and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Finally getting a big stage to do what he does on. He's in all the Stone Cold movies, too. Yeah. Walter Scoggins is in there. Samuel Jackson, Bruce Dern, like... IMDb doesn't lie, man. If you work, you're going to get better. You cannot get better sitting at home thinking you're better than the shit job you just didn't even go for.
Yeah.
Now, I realize that's exactly the opposite of what I said a few weeks ago is from a director's standpoint, where I was like, I would never direct a sci-fi movie, or I'm not going to spend 2 years on some shit project. I don't necessarily think the more you direct, the better you get. But I think with acting, it is definitely a muscle that you have to go out there every week and get
better.
Work it.
Yeah. Well, if you want to establish range.
Yeah.
But it's actually kind of like, you know, one of the things that I counsel musicians on. You know, you get a young musician who thinks that they're going to go somewhere and, you know, be the overnight star. I was like, yeah, if you're like the 1% of the 1%, that'll happen. If you're not, you're going to be like the greatest guitar player I've ever heard. No, I'm gonna couch that. The greatest guitar player I've ever worked with. It's amazing that he's worked with me, but he's also worked in studios. He's also worked with Nashville touring artists. This guy works from Tuesday to Sunday. If he's not on tour with people, he works. He plays local gigs. It's just...
The world is full of geniuses you never heard about.
Yeah.
The world's full of great actors that, for whatever reason, don't have the gumption to flex that muscle.
But I think that's where it really kind of...
And we've said this before. Persistence.
Yeah. But at the same time...
That's it, persistence.
You either work or you don't.
You know, one of the best I like... I you see on screen, but Kris Kristofferson. Actor, musician, performer.
Poet.
I think he's one of the few guys that actually deserves the Renaissance Man title.
I have to agree with it. And I'm not a fan of Kris Kristofferson music. I'm a fan of his songwriting, not his singing ability. But that dude works like nobody. I mean,
you don't realize how many songs that guy has written.
That's true, too.
That guy is constantly just... He's in everything and just keeps doing it.
Most of the 80s country music, some of the 70s, some of the early 90s, that guy wrote your favorite song.
And then if you didn't know that, then you got a new generation that was reintroduced to him through the Blade movies. And everybody liked him as Whistler.
He's Whistler. He's great.
And then he got reintroduced through the Highwaymen project. I mean, the guy just works.
Yeah.
He's not worried about his brand. He's not just, oh, no, I can't do this project because it hurts the Kris Kristofferson brand. No, he just works.
There's something to that. And you and I talk about it all the time, like, we're not filming enough stuff. This podcast eats up a lot of our time. Much more so than maybe we originally thought.
Yeah.
But it's like, all right, if we're going to keep occasionally referring to filmmaking on the show, we should probably actually do some filmmaking. and if you truly have it in you and it's truly, you don't need a lot of money. You can do something.
Yeah. Yeah,
just to do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Which we're going to do, which I'm excited about this year. We're going to do a couple things. But I think this film is filled with actors who just work it. They're in Hell Comes to Frogtown because their agent gave them the script. The money was right. They had bills to pay. It's just another experience.
See, all right. Well, to bring it back to Roddy, why didn't he make it past these two?
I don't know. I'd love to ask him. I'd love to ask, like, after they live, what did you go after? What did you pursue?
Were there bigger
action movies that you auditioned for you didn't get? Did you just recede into the...
He continued to work. we didn't see it or we didn't pay attention to it, but I mean, if you look on IMDb, he's got 121 credits.
I mean, a lot of those are, a majority of those are wrestling stuff.
Sure. But he was still acting even up until
he was. Yeah, I think that, you know,
various movies. He, I mean, I'm a big cartoon guy. He was also, he did one of the voices in DC did a Green Lantern animated feature, yeah. Emerald Knights. He had a part in that with Nathan Fillion.
Yeah,
which was the voice obviously of Hal Jordan, the lead. But hey, you look over there's you look down the credits.
Yeah,
there's Roddy Piper being the voice in this animated feature.
Yeah,
so he was still out there constantly. He had a new project every, you know, almost every year. Several projects.
I don't know. He's such a fascinating man to me because, you know, he had a lot of things going for him. He's one of the few wrestlers that I know that never won the belt, but everybody would put him up in that stratosphere of the belt winners.
Oh, he's one of the
memorable.
Greats. One of the greats. You can't, as a lifelong WWF, WWE fan, well, top five. Easy.
Well, once again,
as far as mic presence,
you put okay. Well, back in the day, he was the bad guy. What would be?
Yeah, but he was the bad guy you love to hate, like The Rock.
Yeah.
What? But see, the point being is
people forget The Rock was a bad guy.
He turned heel. He was a good guy. He was a heel. Then a baby face.
His greatest years were as a heel.
Right.
He cared about Hogan if there was no villain.
Yeah. But at the same time, you still have villains that will win. Like. You still have villains that will win the belt.
But people talk about him to this day. Rowdy Roddy Piper. Still remember him to this day because he made that good guy look the best.
He got him over, yeah.
He was a great heel. He was a phenomenal heel.
To me, it's so amazing that when you have a personality that's strong, because you always kind of look at, you know, who needs the push. And for whatever reason, you know, Rowdy was such a stable, strong personality, and I don't mean to say the word stable with Roddy, but
it was nothing but unstable.
But the powers that be were like, all right, this guy doesn't need a belt to push him over with the crowd because he's already over with the crowd. But then when you get into the point of his acting deal, I just, there was such a flash in the pan where you could see moments of really coolness to where I'm just kind of curious as why that didn't betray more. And even as older Roddy, you know, as 55-year-old, 57-year-old Roddy, you know, when he's doing the Legends House, and which is a goofy little reality show on the WWE Network, you know, there's this one scene where they were tasked with making a commercial, and the product that his team was supposed to promote was so absurd. It was like pink flamingos for party accessories. And And I know it's scripted to a lot of extent, but just watching his interviews and how his mind would work through that, and you could even read it in the podcast and read it in his interviews as well. This was a smart guy.
He was smart.
He's so complex, dude. I wonder whether his, you know, with greatness comes attitude. Sometimes with attitude and ego, you kind of overstep your bounds. I wonder if that kind of helped or that kind of hurt him.
Could be. I don't know if we'll ever know.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, though. It leads me to one of the points I want to touch on. Why is the transition from wrestler to movie star such a hard one to navigate? I mean, you know, let's look at it. The Rock is the pinnacle success story from wrestler to
but boxer. Even he had a hard road because when he got into that Disney contract and started doing Tinkerbell and Tooth Fairy,
that I mean rough road but I mean let's look at it. Wrestler success story box office wise.
Yeah.
The Rock is the cream of the crop. Nobody's ever done it better. No, nobody's ever done it better. He's the number one box office draw in the world. There's never been a wrestler that has claimed that title.
Yeah.
True. Now, I would say
even though I think Batista did awesome.
Well, Batista is coming in close in second.
Let's kind of talk to this. Rock is the pinnacle success story,
but Batista's only had like a couple of offerings.
Stone Cold is holding his own on the direct to video.
Yeah,
he's done some. He's good in the.
I love him as
but
a screen
he's not.
Presence.
He's not going to be America's. He's likable. He, like Roddy, he can play it subtle and low and believable, and really can play a common man. His direct-to-video stuff is good.
Yeah.
Then you've got Batista, who had the Guardians of the Galaxy breakthrough. Yeah. I actually watched a direct-to-video movie he did where he's like a ex-gangster, where he was okay. I think the verdict's out on
Batista. Well, he also did, he picked up some good ones. He went Man with the Iron Fists.
He was in that horrible movie. But
he did the
he's in the new Bond movie, Spectre.
Correct, but he also did Vin Diesel, the sequel to Pitch Black.
Yeah, yeah. Chronicles.
The third one.
Chronicles.
Riddick.
No, Riddick.
Riddick. Riddick. He was in that one.
Yeah.
He's picking up those parts. He showed chops. He showed that he was willing.
I think the verdict on Batista's out, but what I saw in him, just as the gangster movie I saw, he actually
liked. Yeah, you mentioned that before, and I meant to watch
plays
that.
It.
Yeah.
He plays it calm and low and slow and not this big
over the
wrestling
top.
Presence.
See, I wonder if you asked, you know, why is the transition hard? I wonder if you're talking to wrestlers who still have ties with the WWE that know that they still rely on the WWE, if they have to protect that WWE persona and that WWE brand.
Well, Batista came back during that Guardians of the Galaxy phase.
But it was just
Guardians of the Galaxy. But he was shit on. He did not belong in Attitude.
You know, no. You talk about The Rock. He did break himself away from the Disney thing. He went back full-blown into WWE.
Yeah.
And that's when you really saw him change. I mean, he came out and he was...
Yeah.
And to his credit, he still straddles that line. He'll come back and wrestle. He's always got one toe in the WWE thing. But the guy is clearly much more aligned on a much more structured career path than he started out on. But these guys that we're talking about have managed to find niches in movies that don't heavily rely on their wrestling personas.
Yeah.
That's why the biggest, most popular wrestler of all time, Hulk Hogan, sucks in film. It was the biggest... He could never cross over because...
you're hiring Hulk Hogan.
He couldn't shake...
Yeah.
He is Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
Well, he's not Hulk Hogan. He's Hulk Hogan. That's who he is.
Whether he's on the set of Rocky, whether he's...
Thunder Bay, even. Thunder Lips.
You're not going to get a subtle, nuanced...
Yeah.
Anything out of fucking Hulk Hogan.
Yeah.
And I kind of say it was some... I always hated Hulk Hogan.
I loved him.
I hated him.
I loved him. I even watched all episodes of Thunder Bay.
That WrestleMania where Ultimate Warrior defeated Hogan was the greatest thing I'd ever seen. I hated Hogan. He always seemed like a poser to me, just a big phony.
That racist bastard.
Well, now it turns out he's a giant dick, apparently, but...
He was and always
will be. It's not for everybody. You can't make that transition.
Well, another wrestler, Andre the Giant.
He had one. Well, I'm not counting the one-offs.
Like, yeah, Andre the Giant had the one-off with Princess Bride. And I loved him in that.
But Andre the Giant.
Jesse the Body.
Andre the Giant was not.
If it weren't for Arnold films, Running Man, Predator, he doesn't have anything.
Yeah, but when you're watching Jesse the Body, he's still Jesse the Body.
But when I'm watching Predator, I'm not seeing Jesse the Body.
To me, yeah, I'm still seeing...
When I watch Running Man...
Captain Freedom?
You bet your ass I'm seeing Jesse the Body Running Man. But I never saw
Predator.
I don't
need this shit.
But then again, Running Man had a shit TV director.
Yeah.
Predator had John McTiernan.
Correct.
Good director?
Yeah.
All of a sudden... I'm sorry, when he's, you know... Make Cambodia look like Kansas. That's not Jesse the Body. Jesse the Body was... Pink, purple tutus and fringe.
Tutus.
He was. That dude was.
No, he was boas, not tutus. Come
when
on.
When he gives Mac that flask, a little taste of home.
A little taste of home.
That's not Jesse the Body. That's a director saying, you know what?
I agree.
This is
a
conversation between two grown military soldiers. Drop that shit.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't count him because he only had those two movies.
Yeah.
And he had.
And Tag Team.
And Tag Team with Roddy Piper.
I love Tag Team,
he's
man.
Good in it.
John Cena should be a goddamn movie star right now.
I really think so. His
offerings. He's had a few.
This summer alone, he was in the Amy Schumer movie Trainwreck. My wife said he was really funny in it.
Really? I didn't know that.
He's had a few.
And he was in another comedy this summer.
He's had a few small parts. He's had a few main parts.
That guy has charisma. He's got the body.
What was that one movie that he did, like 12 bullets or something like that, that was just horrible?
12 rounds.
Yeah, 12 rounds was a horrible movie. No. But his acting was actually good in it.
He's not bad. He should be a fucking movie star.
I kind of agree with that. And I'm not even that big of a Cena fan.
And don't you dare say Kevin Nash in that Punisher movie.
No, Kevin Nash in the...
The only other one I was going to say was Triple H in the third Blade movie.
Yeah, but when Triple H did the suplex move, I was like, come on, man. Why do you have to move that?
The point being is, I mean, you bring in Triple H.
You didn't think about Kevin Nash in that sailor suit and Punisher?
Cody was Kevin Nash and Magic Mike.
Was he in Magic Mike? Kevin Nash?
Both of them. I mean, according to my wife. According to my wife.
I'm disgusted now. Disgusted, I tell you.
I'm sorry, Matthew McConaughey was in Magic Mike. I had to watch it.
You disgust me.
My whole thing is, it's such a natural progression from wrestler to actor. They are performers or entertainers.
But it's just different styles,
unlike underwear model to actor, Jai Courtney.
Yeah.
You know, I'm an underwear model, but I'm going to transition to acting. To me, that makes no sense. It's like, well, I've been doing a lot of underwear modeling. I'm going to be a cardiologist now. It makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
You're Jai Courtney. You suck. Model underwear. Don't you try to be Kyle Reese. You suck ass.
All right. We're going down a road. We don't need to go down.
Wrestler to actor, I understand. Underwear model. All right, Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg, you did it.
It's too much.
Mark Wahlberg, you did it. Congrats. No, but you opened up the floodgates.
No, he went to singer to underwear model to actor.
He was a singer before.
Don't you shit on Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Hey, you're not going to get that shit on here.
Marky Mark should be shit on.
I can't even imagine.
Doctor, so would Mitzi here. Doctor, would you... What are the shame and the hurt that Jai Courtney's parents are feeling right now?
It's got to be unimaginable. Unimaginable.
No, they've seen Jai Courtney's paycheck.
For the career. It's too soon to tell.
They're
disappointment in the disappointment and the longing for success. That's just so painful. No, the chances of Jai Courtney being a successful actor, it's not too soon to tell. He sucks.
When he's going to be as successful.
And I'm sorry, Arnold News, Radio News. You shit on us about our Jai Courtney thing all you want. He sucks ass. They ruined the movie.
Wait till you see Suicide Squad. Good. He's going to be in that.
Release your hate.
Is he?
Yes.
Who's he in that?
Captain Boomerang.
Welcome to my hell.
Okay, the hate is justified. Release it. Release your
Wasn't
anger.
Wasn't there a Marvel hero, a Marvel villain, Boomerang?
There was.
He was part of Sinister Six, wasn't he?
He was. But there was also a Captain. DC Captain Boomerang. He was a villain of The Flash.
So you had a Marvel Boomerang, a DC Captain Boomerang.
Correct.
Welcome to Nerddom.
These guys go back and forth.
Muddy Waters.
Each other
Muddy
off.
Waters.
Welcome
Muddy
to Waters. Nerddom.
I will say this. There were two sequels to Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Frogtown?
I didn't know that. Frogtown 2, starring Maniac Cops, Robert Zar.
What?
As Samuel Hell.
Oh, good God.
Which I have to see.
I don't... How do I not know these things exist?
Co-starring Lou Ferrigno.
Oh, wow.
My
Blade Runners, Blade Runner and Striking Distance, Breon James.
My mind is blown.
Charles Napier of Simpsons fame. And USA Up All Night's Rhonda Shear's in it.
I'm going to lay down in defeat and cry.
That I really want to see. And then they also, that was 92. In 2002, 10 years later, the original director of this did Max Hell Frog Warrior.
Max Hell Frog, okay.
Which the only notable name in that was Joe Estevez, Martin Sheen's brother, I guess. Emilio Estevez's uncle. If we're lucky, we can get him in the next film. If we're lucky. So, if you're so inclined like I am, seek those out, because I really want to see those movies. But you got to plunk down some money. They're not streaming. So... but yeah, guys, I think we did Roddy justice tonight. I think if anything, we saw that he's kind of this untapped guy that never really, for whatever reason, could have been his own doing. We don't know. Could have been, maybe, I don't think it wasn't he didn't want it. I think maybe it was, as long as you've got that one toe in the safety net of wrestling, maybe it's just easier to just take that check, sign autographs at the shows, and like you never really have to go all in on a new career.
That's possible too.
But either way, he showed glimpses in this that he certainly blew out in They Live. I can't believe we're never going to see him again. Anything new? Sucks.
Oh, he would have been perfect in Angel Dust.
Yeah. Now I gotta approach Dusty Rhodes people, I guess.
Oh. Oh, wait, there it is. Number 10 on the list. We can't go there.
Never. Damn it. We'll see what Jake the Snake's up to.
What was the snake's name?
It was Damien, wasn't it?
Yes.
Do we get Damien for that price?
Sure.
Damien looks really dead, Jake.
Opiates. He's sleepy.
Maybe we can get Jake the Snake.
Damien's an extra 25.
Maybe we get Ravishing Rick Rude.
No.
He's dead, too. That guy.
Wait, is Dusty dead?
Dusty Rhodes?
Yeah, the American Dream?
Yeah, like last month. It was like a huge deal. Yeah.
Oh, I missed. Yeah, fuck.
They're all dying, dude. No, he made sense. He was like 70-something.
Oh, yeah. It was like overweight and just out of shape,
Well, we can't get Roddy Piper. We can't get Rick Rude. We can't get Dusty Rhodes. I'll just... You know what? If we're able to actually get this project off the ground, which I believe we will someday, maybe we'll get Chris Benoit to... Oh, don't tell me there's a problem with Chris Benoit. Well, boys, not only do Rowdy Roddy justice tonight, which he certainly deserved, we smoked a damn good cigar. Monte Cristo Classic Series Toro. You never got the butter.
I never got the butter.
Tuttle and I got the butter.
Got the butter, which is surprising because I'm not a retro.
And I will owe both of you for it.
I'll write you a poem about it. It was that good. I'm going to write something about it.
A haiku?
A haiku, maybe. But it was a damn good cigar, and it really paired perfectly with the Summerfest. What are you guys' closing thoughts on the beer?
Loved it.
It's fantastic.
Great summertime beer. Very crisp.
To me,
refreshing.
This trumps the other summertime beers we've done lately, like the Fancy Lawnmower. Was the Fancy Lawnmower we were trying to think of as far as it was very straight ahead?
No. Well, yes. I would say
it's like
that
a domestic with...
I would say that Fancy Lawnmower is in the same wheelhouse as Sierra Nevada's Summerfest.
To me, this has a little more interesting action on the back end than the Fancy Lawnmower had.
This one has a little bit more hops, I think.
Well, you know I'm an IPA man, so...
You tell us ad nauseum.
Yes. I like the hoppy aftertaste. I dig it. But it really paired well with the Monte Cristo.
I really enjoyed that beer, man, on a hot day.
The cigar had a lot of nice transitions. And you know what? Hell Comes to Frogtown is a fun flick. It took me back to the USA up all night, sitting on my girlfriend's... In front of her, it was one of those console TVs that encased in wood. And I just sat there for hours on end, ignoring her and just watching TV.
It's amazing she married you.
And some would say maybe I've stuck to that. No. We joke about it now, but I was just so in love with cable TV. I never had it. And USA Up All Night with Ronda Shear was a big part of that. So this kind of brought back some cool memories. All we were missing was Gilbert Gottfried. If he had made an appearance, my childhood cable TV memories would be complete.
Just remembering Rhonda Shearer with that little high pitched squeak up all night.
So cute. I will say this: I'm going to try to get us something a little bit different next show. We've done two pretty much straight up late '80s exploitation flicks in a row. Good way to start season two of the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. But we have men of many interests. And
that's right. That's right.
I'm going to try to spread our wings a little bit next time.
Bridges over Madison County is next.
I'm going to be out of town.
We'll find something. But find us on Facebook, Tuesday Night Cigar Club. Give us a like. And we post some stuff on there frequently. We're pretty big on Instagram, too. TNCC
underscore
podcast. Tuttle, you handle our Twitter side of things with all our bodybuilding friends.
At TNCCcast. Keep sending us your opinion on whey powder. I've started my workout regime because there's a chance I might be on film in the next 2 months, so I'm trying to bulk up.
You know, it's funny. You're going to be hearing a lot more about this. We're going to be filming something top secret, much like our location, which I will not divulge. No one knows where we are.
You divulged it, like, continuously all night.
There's, like, six times, yeah. You can check the audio score. You really did.
Did I know?
You did. And then some. I think right now you're actually drawing a picture to it.
Crap, now we've got to move.
I'm still happy with the beard. We are going to be filming something very soon, which everyone needs to get in super badass shape for. I don't, because if you remember last episode, Mincy commented on my bodybuilder arms.
I think he was just...
Yeah, he commented. It was early on. He wasn't drunk yet.
Absolutely.
You can follow me on Twitter at bodybuildingarms69. Got pretty impressive pipes. FritzBeerMusic.com. Join the Single of the Month Club. We've been listening to him again tonight. We left Fritz out of the mix last week, and it was because we started the show with Mincy singing. I didn't want him to compete with Fritz because you can't compete.
No,
you cannot.
You cannot compete with Fritz and win. And I just never remembered to hit the damn plate. So that's what happens when you drink; you forget things. But go to FritzBeerMusic.com. Buy some music. Buy a lot of music.
Yeah,
and. KeithAHell.com. He's got his new studio set up. He's sounding
gorgeous, man. Oh, you're sounding gorgeous, Keith.
We kind of caught him a few weeks where he's in between studios, and it worked because we're in a submarine, so it sounded like he was in a submarine.
That's fine.
Now that we're in a new top secret location on Mount Rushmore.
Ah, oh, damn, I did it again.
And hey, if you want to catch all the references or some of the references that we make, check out Underbelly. You know, that was a homegrown from Mr. Kate over there.
Todd, I have a DVD. Do you have the capabilities of putting it on YouTube?
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah, we'll get you to put it up there on YouTube, and we'll let the world see it for all its.
I'm sure I can hire.
We reference it enough; it should be out
there. I'm sure I can hire a 14-year-old to rip it.
Right. Well, we got screwed by our distributor, so I really have. I'm an open chest wound here. You can just take it. I just don't care anymore. Monte Cristo, Classic Series Toro, winner.
Yeah, check out the links on the website.
Summerfest, Sierra Nevada, winner. Hell Comes to Frogtown, fun.
Yes. Put all three together.
Put them all three together. You can't lose. You can't lose, boys. May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. We'll see you next week.
Learn more about the time my college buddies and I traveled down to Frogtown, and I paid $5 for a frog skank to lick my my stamps. She licked my stamps, and I dropped off several postcards at the Frogtown post office. Yeah, that's it. Nothing wrong with a little froggy philately. Nothing at all. It's all about the stamps. In the meantime, to learn more about the cigars and libations enjoyed on tonight's episode, you can visit www.MonteCristoSocialClub.com and www.SierraNevada.com. For more on O'Brien's Irish Pub, the live music leader in Central Texas,
please visit O'BrienSimple.com and download their free smartphone app, where you'll find full beer listings including over 40 on tap, menu information, and a calendar of upcoming live events. To listen and purchase music heard on tonight's program, check out www.fritzbeermusic.com. Thank you for listening to the Tuesday Night Cigar Club podcast. This is Keith A. Howell saying, until next time, friends, unless we see you sooner at the pub. So keep it smoky, and for God's sake, keep it ballsy as well.